He was the most powerful alpha on the continent, and he chose wrong. Not because he was weak, because he was a king first and a man never. Watch what happens when destiny refuses to stay buried, when a child born from rejection becomes the weapon an empire cannot survive without, and when the only woman a king ever truly feared walks back into his war carrying 9 years of silence like a blade at his throat. Stay until the end. Drop your city in the comments. I want to know where my pack is watching from. And if this story hits different, you already know what to do. The ceremony began before dawn. That was tradition. The Alpha Awakening, the Empire called it, the moment the Moon's Covenant pressed itself into the bones of the ruling bloodline and announced, without negotiation, without politics, without any consideration for the man who wore the crown, exactly who he belonged to. The choosing happened in the body before it happened in the mind. Ascent first, then heat behind the sternum, a pulling sensation like something hooking itself into the muscle between the ribs. Then the name rising in the throat before the mouth had decided to say it. King Velor Dain had known about the ceremony his entire life. His father had described it once, quietly, in the way men of that generation described things they considered weaknesses disguised as gifts. He'd said, "You will know her before you see her, and then you will spend the rest of your reign deciding what to do about that." Velor had assumed that meant the bond was complicated. He had not assumed it meant the bond was catastrophic. The throne hall of Iron Peak Citadel could hold 3,000 standing. On the morning of the Alpha Awakening, it held 2,641. Velor knew the count because he'd made his chamberlain report it twice. Every noble house in the Empire had sent at least one representative. Every military commander above the rank of Brigade Wolf stood in formation along the eastern wall. The ambassadors from four neighboring kingdoms occupied the gallery boxes above, watching with the careful, neutral expressions of people who had come to witness either a coronation of certainty or the first tremor of an empire's undoing, and were privately prepared for either outcome. Velor stood on the dais above the golden throne and did not sit. That was also tradition. The Alpha stood until the bond named its chosen. Sitting too early meant arrogance. Standing too long meant weakness. The balance was everything. He was 31 years old. He had ruled for 6 years following his father's death from a fever that had spread through the garrison towns faster than any of the court physicians had anticipated. He was not a popular king in the way that some rulers were popular, the easy sort of men who laughed loudly at feasts and remembered the names of common soldiers. He was respected, which he had always considered the more durable currency. His battle record was clean. The eastern border wars had ended under his command with terms that favored the empire without humiliating the losing side badly enough to guarantee revenge. The harvests had been adequate. The tax reform he'd pushed through the noble council had made him three permanent enemies among the old houses and quietly earned him a dozen more among the merchant guilds, which he calculated as an acceptable trade. He knew how to govern. He had never, until that morning, doubted his ability to govern himself. The scent reached him when the outer doors opened, and the processional of unbound women from every territory of the empire began their walk toward the dais. It was not a dramatic thing, the scent. He had expected something overwhelming, something that would drop him to his knees, the way the old stories described. His father's account had been more restrained, but even that had suggested something recognizable as profound. What Velor experienced was quieter than that, and far more alarming for its quietness. It was the smell of rain on iron, clean and sharp, threaded through with something he had no name for, not sweet, not perfumed, but alive in a way that made every other smell in the hall suddenly feel like background noise. Like the hall had been full of static his entire life, and someone had just turned it off. He did not move. He was very careful not to move. He stood on the dais and watched 219 women walk in processional formation through the throne hall while his eyes found the source of that scent 11 seconds before she was visible past the line of women ahead of her. Celine Arden. He knew her name because his chamberlain had prepared him a full register of every woman in the processional with territory of origin, family name, and social standing. He had read it the night before with the same methodical attention he gave to military reports. Celine Arden, from the frontier township of Greywater, daughter of the regional healer Orin Arden, no noble blood, no military family connection, no political alliance of any kind. Her occupation was listed as apprentice herbalist, which was the polite way of saying she mixed poultices and set bones in a place too small and too far from the capital for anyone to have noticed her exist. She was 23. She walked near the back of the processional because the women were organized by territory of origin, and Greywater was at the far edge of the Empire's frontier, almost past the point where the Empire's authority meant anything at all. She was not dressed for a throne hall. The other women in the processional wore formal attire ranging from modest to aggressively elaborate, silk and embroidery, and carefully arranged hair. Celine wore clean wool the color of gray water, which he supposed was not a coincidence. Her hair was dark and pinned at the base of her skull with what looked like a bone needle. No jewelry. She walked with the careful uprightness of someone who had been told to walk carefully and was following the instruction without understanding why it was necessary. She had a scratch on her left forearm, healing, 3 days old from the pinkness of it. She had the hands of someone who worked with them. Her jaw was set in a way that suggested she was managing something, some internal pressure she hadn't resolved yet. And her eyes moved around the hall with an assessment quality that had nothing to do with wonder, and everything to do with the habit of someone who spent their working hours figuring out what was wrong before it got worse. She was remarkable in the way that useful things were remarkable. Not ornamental, functional. Built for something. The Bond recognized her the moment she crossed the threshold into the hall's inner chamber, and Valor felt it the way he imagined a blade felt when it slid home into a sheath. Not violent, but definitive. A sense of rightness that was almost worse than violence because it couldn't be argued with. He was a king. He had been managing his face in public since he was 9 years old, when his father had sat him down after a humiliating loss at his first council meeting and explained that a king's expression was a governing instrument, not a mirror. Valor stood on the dais and kept his face exactly where it needed to be while his chest tried to remember how breathing worked. The processional halted. Tradition dictated that the Alpha speak the name of the Chosen. The Bond would confirm it. Those present with Alpha blood would feel the resonance of a true naming, a harmonic vibration in the air that no court theater could fake. The Empire's most senior wolf commander, Herod Geln, stood at the base of the dais ready to confirm it. Ambassadors in the gallery above leaned forward almost imperceptibly. Valor opened his mouth. He said her name. Celine Arden. The resonance came. He felt it in his back teeth, in the floor beneath his boots, in the specific way the air pressure in the hall changed as 2,640 people processed the confirmation that their king's destined mate was an unknown frontier healer with no bloodline and no political value. The silence afterward had texture. Celine Arden stood very still in her gray wool dress and looked at him with the steady, unreadable expression of someone who was going to need significantly more information before she decided what to feel about this. He understood that expression, because he was wearing its exact mirror.
Marsite.
What happened next took 47 minutes. Valor would know, because he had made his chamberlain count it afterward. Because he needed to know how long a man could hold himself together at the center of a collapse before the collapse became irreversible. He did not announce the bonding formally. He stepped down from the dais, which was not traditional, and which he watched the senior nobles register with the specific quality of attention that meant they were already building arguments from it. And he walked to where Celine stood at the back of the processional formation, and he said quietly enough that only the six people immediately around her could hear, "Walk with me." She walked with him, down the side corridor, into the antechamber behind the throne hall that his chamberlain had cleared and set with two chairs and a water pitcher, because his chamberlain was the only person in the palace who anticipated the possibility that Valor might need a room to think in. He sat. She sat. He poured her a cup of water because he needed to be doing something with his hands, and he had spent enough years in field medicine to know that offering water was useful in situations that hadn't been categorized yet. She said, "You looked like someone stepped on your foot." He set down the water pitcher. "When?" "When you said my name. You controlled it fast, but at the start, for about half a second, you looked like someone had stepped directly on your foot." Valor studied her. "You noticed that." "I noticed things. It's professionally relevant where I come from. A person's face at the moment pain hits tells you more than whatever they say about it afterward. That's a skill. It's a habit. There's a difference. She picked up the water cup he'd poured, looked at it, set it down. What happens now? It wasn't a question, precisely. It was a request for information from someone who intended to use that information to make a decision. He had the specific experience in that moment of talking to someone who had no interest in being managed. He said, traditionally, the bonding ceremony would proceed within the week. Announcement, formal recognition of the mate, adjustment of the courts. I don't mean what happens traditionally. She looked at him with those healer's eyes that were busy categorizing him whether he liked it or not. I mean what happens. You're a king. I'm a frontier healer. You have the expression of a man who is doing arithmetic. Valor looked at her for a long moment. He said, I'm going to be honest with you, because I think you can handle it, and I find I have very little interest in managing your expectations when you clearly aren't asking me to. All right. The bond is real. I felt it. You felt it. The resonance confirmed it before the entire hall, which means there are 2,600 people out there who know exactly what the Moon's Covenant named. He paused. And I am currently in negotiations for a political treaty with the Valyrie's Kingdom that requires me to formally claim their princess as my queen before the end of this season. A treaty that will close the western border, remove a military threat that has been bleeding this empire's garrison budget for 12 years, and protect approximately 400,000 people in the frontier territories from a war I am not certain we could win at current strength. Celine was quiet for a moment. 400,000 people. Approximately. She looked at the water cup. Where are these frontier territories? Coastal west, the Grey Marsh lowlands primarily. Some reach into the highland border zones. I came from a territory 3 weeks east of the Grey Marsh lowlands. She paused. I spent 4 months last spring treating wounds in a town called Derrick's Crossing after a valorous border raid. 11 people died. I remember all their names. Valor said nothing. So, she said, you need to choose the princess. I need to choose the empire. He held her gaze. Those are not the same thing, and I will not pretend they are. But the result is the same. She sat with that for a moment. Her hands were flat on her knees, and she was looking at the middle distance with the expression of someone processing information that was going to require significant rearranging of what they had expected from today. Then she said, "What do you need from me?" Again, not a question. He felt something shift in his chest that he did not have a name for and did not try to name. To accept it publicly, without disruption. The ceremony is still assembled. I need to announce a formal... I need to explain to those 2,600 people that the bond occurred, but that the formal claiming will proceed differently. You need me to stand in that hall and let you reject me in front of the entire empire. Yes. She was quiet for another long moment. Outside the antechamber, he could hear the murmur of the assembled court through the stone, a sound like the sea before a storm, low and continuous and charged. What do I get? She said. He hadn't expected the question. He had expected anger or tears or the particular ice of someone who had decided not to show either. The question was something else. Name it, he said. My village. Greywater. It's 17 families and a mill and a winter where we lost 4 children to a fever because we couldn't get enough supply shipments through before the mountain passes closed. She looked at him directly. I want a standing supply contract with the Imperial Quartermaster, guaranteed delivery before first frost every year, medical provisions, wool, grain reserve. I want it written and sealed before we go back in that hall. Valor looked at her for a long moment. He said, done. She nodded once, like a woman who had just closed a trade agreement, not like someone whose entire future had just been restructured around her without her consent. He added quietly, I'm sorry. She stood. She smoothed her gray wool dress with both hands, a gesture that had the quality of preparation, of someone putting themselves back into working order. Are you sorry it happened, or sorry for what you're doing? Both, he said, but more for what I'm doing. She looked at him one more time, and what was in her face then was not anger and not grief and not the particular blankness of someone shutting down. It was something cleaner and harder than all of those, something that he would not fully understand until years later when he was standing in a frontier wasteland watching his son step in front of a king's guard without flinching. She said, "Then don't waste it." And she walked back toward the throne hall. Betchant. The announcement took 8 minutes. Valor stood on the dais and spoke with the clarity he had trained himself to maintain in the middle of sieges and council floors and the specific kind of domestic disaster that the noble houses specialized in engineering. He explained that the bond had been acknowledged, that the moon's covenant was recognized and would be honored in the empire's records, and that as king, he was exercising his authority to defer the formal claiming in light of treaty obligations of existential importance to the empire's security, that Princess Seraphine Valeris would be formally claimed as queen, that this was his decision made in full knowledge of what was being set aside, and that he would answer personally for its consequences. He did not look at Celine while he spoke. He made himself not look, because looking would have been cruelty. She stood at the back of the processional formation in her gray wool dress, and she was absolutely still, and the 2,600 people in the hall were doing the thing that large assemblies do when they are processing the structural implications of what they are witnessing. A low, continuous recalibration, 1,000 individual calculations running simultaneously about what this meant for power, for alliance, for the social geometry of the empire in the next decade. Celine Arden stood still through all of it. When it was done, she walked out through the side doors without looking at him, and she did not look back. He watched her go. He was very careful, after she passed through the doors, to return his attention to the hall and its calculations, because he was a king, and kings did not watch doors. He watched the door for 3 full seconds longer than he should have. 9 years later, he was still paying for those 3 seconds. Not because they represented sentimentality. He had burned that out of himself efficiently in the years following the ceremony. He paid for them because they had been the last honest moment in a decade of governing decisions that had been structurally sound and humanly catastrophic, and some part of him had known it at the time and had been unable to stop it. He stood now in the Ironwood Highlands, which were not on any official imperial map, because the frontier territories technically ended at the Duskwall Ridge, and whatever existed beyond the ridge had never been worth mapping. The Highlands were worth mapping. He was making that mental note as his riding party pushed through the tree line into a clearing that smelled of old smoke and pine resin and the specific mineral sharpness of a water source nearby, because a good commander always assessed terrain even when the terrain was in a part of the empire he was supposed to pretend didn't exist. He had 40 soldiers with him. This was not a war party. This was an intelligence operation masquerading as a hunting expedition, which was the cover story his chamberlain had put in the official court record, because the real story, that King Valor Dain was personally chasing rumors about a miracle child in the frontier, because the empire was quietly coming apart at its seams, and he was out of better options, was not something that fit in official court records. The empire was coming apart at its seams. He turned that over in his mind the way a man turns over a stone he knows has something unpleasant under it, because the honest accounting of a problem was the first step to managing it. The Western Border Treaty with Valeris had held for 7 years, and then frayed in the eighth when King Aaron Valeris died without a clear succession, and his cousins had spent the better part of a year tearing each other apart over the crown. The political capital Valor had spent 9 years ago in that throne hall, the bond rejected, the frontier healer sent away, the marriage to Seraphine sealed in a ceremony that half the noble houses had attended with the polite expressions of people watching a very expensive mistake unfold, that political capital had purchased 7 years. It had not purchased a solution. The royal marriage had produced no heir. That was the thing he did not say aloud. In the court record, it was described through a series of careful diplomatic phrasings that amounted, if you followed the logic carefully enough, to the same conclusion. But no one said it directly, because saying it directly meant acknowledging that the empire's most fundamental continuity mechanism had failed, and that the failure pointed backward in time toward a specific morning in the throne hall and a specific decision made in an antechamber. He did not indulge the backward pointing. It was not useful. What was useful was the intelligence his frontier scouts had brought back over the course of the last 8 months, which described, In the careful language of people who were afraid of sounding unstable, a boy of approximately 9 years who had appeared at three separate crisis points along the northern frontier, the collapse of the Ashgard fortress, which should have required a full battalion to hold against the creature incursion, and had instead been held by a local militia that afterward credited an unnamed child warrior whose methods none of them could describe clearly. The routing of a Shadow Dominion advance near the Greywood settlements, where surviving settlers described a boy who had stood in front of something massive and looked it in the face until it stopped moving. The taming of the Iron Maw Pack, a wolf confederation that hadn't acknowledged human authority in 40 years, apparently accomplished by the same child in under an hour. Valor had read all three reports individually and had not drawn the conclusion they were inviting until the third one, at which point he had drawn it and spent 2 days deciding whether to act on it. He had acted on it. He had 40 soldiers, a frontier map that ended at the Duskwall Ridge, and 9 years of Empire governance built on a foundation he had known was compromised from the moment he'd sealed it. He was acting on the intelligence. He was not thinking about the other thing. He was thinking about it constantly. The clearing ahead opened into what had once been a settlement and was now something more permanent. Stone buildings, not the rough timber structures of a temporary camp. Garden plots showing winter preparation. Smoke from multiple chimney flues steady and organized. Someone had been here long enough to build in stone. His lead scout pulled alongside him and said, "Low. Populated. Minimum 40, possibly twice that. Not organized military, but there are wolves on the perimeter. 8 at least, possibly more in the trees." Valor nodded. "Don't read as aggressive." "Not yet, but they know we're here." They had known he was here from the moment his party crossed the ridge. He understood that now, reading the settlement, the quality of stillness from the structures, a certain absence of casual movement that meant people had seen them coming and made decisions about it. Someone in that settlement had organizational intelligence. They had prepared, not panicked. That said something. He kept his riding party moving forward at a deliberate pace, hands visible, banner flying the Imperial House colors. Not because he expected the banner to buy trust in a place this far outside the Empire's functional reach, but because it was unambiguous information and ambiguity was a tool of people who were afraid of what direct communication would reveal. He was not afraid of what direct communication would reveal. He was afraid of something else entirely, and had been since the scout reports started coming in. The woman came out of the settlement's main building when his party was 30 yards from the outer stone wall. She was alone. She walked out through the gate with the quality of movement he associated with people who had made peace with difficult situations, not the false calm of someone performing composure, but the actual calm of someone who had been in danger before and had categorized this specific danger and decided how to respond to it before her feet touched the ground. She wore frontier work clothing, practical and weathered, her dark hair shorter than he remembered, pulled back at her neck. Her hands were empty and held slightly out from her body, which was the traditional gesture of someone indicating they carried no weapon, though the gesture in her case had a quality that made the political meaning of it irrelevant. She stopped 20 yards from his position. She looked at him. He had known, when the scout report started describing the settlement in the Ironwood Highlands, where the trail of the Miracle Child was pointing. He had known it the way he knew structural weaknesses and fortifications, not because he wanted to see them, but because ignoring them didn't make them stop existing. He had known. He had prepared. He had 40 soldiers and a frontier map and 9 years of practice at keeping his face where it needed to be. None of it mattered. The scent reached him across 20 yards of Highlands air, and the bond, which he had spent 9 years maintaining the fiction that he had resolved, did not reawaken gradually. It came back the way a bone came back into its socket, with a pressure that was briefly worse than the original injury, and then immediately, definitively, right in a way that made the 9-year wrongness suddenly visible in retrospect. Celine Arden looked at him across 20 yards, and he saw in her face the same thing happening. The recognition that could not be argued with. The bond remembering itself. And beneath it, layered, 9 years of what had been built on top of the loss of it, and the very specific expression of a woman who had built something she intended to protect. He got down from his horse. He did not know he was going to do it until he was doing it. One of his soldiers made a surprise sound behind him, quickly suppressed. He stood on the ground and walked forward alone, and she did not move, and the distance between them closed until he could see the scar on her collarbone that wasn't there 9 years ago, and the specific way she was controlling her breathing, which was the same method she had used in the antechamber when she was processing information she had not expected. He stopped 6 feet from her. He said, "Celine." She said, "You shouldn't be here." "I know." "Then why are you?" "Because the Empire is dying, and my scouts have been tracking reports of a child who might be the only reason it doesn't." He held her gaze. "And because I needed to know if the reports were pointing where I thought they were pointing." She looked at him without flinching, the particular healer's assessment moving across his face and reading whatever it found there. "And are they?" "Yes," he said. She said nothing. The settlement was silent behind her. His soldiers were silent behind him. The highlands around them held the peculiar stillness of a moment that had been inevitable for a long time and was only now catching up to everyone who needed to be in it. Then, from the gate of the settlement, a boy came out. He moved the way children moved when they were curious about something and had not yet learned to hide the curiosity, with a directness of attention that had not been socialized into caution. He was approximately 9 years old. He had dark hair. He moved with the particular quality of someone whose physical presence was larger than his size suggested, the way that some people had gravity before they'd earned the right to it. He stopped beside Celine and looked up at her. Then he looked at Valor. His eyes were the exact gray of Valor's own. The thing Valor had prepared for and the thing Valor had not prepared for were two different things, and they had just become the same thing, and the world on the other side of this moment was not the world he had ridden into the highlands in. The boy said to his mother, "Is that him?" Celine's jaw was set in the way it had been set in the throne hall antechamber. Her voice was even. "Yes." "The king," the boy said, not a question. "Yes." The boy looked at Valor with those gray eyes, 9 years old and already doing the same assessment that his mother did, reading, categorizing, deciding. And then he said to Valor, with the directness of a child who had never been taught that kings required a specific kind of deference, "You left her." Valor said, "Yes."
"Why?"
The 40 soldiers behind him were very still. Valor looked at the boy who was his son and said, "Because I thought I was making the right decision for the Empire, and I was wrong about what right meant." The boy considered that for a long moment with the gravity of someone who was actually thinking about it rather than waiting to respond. Then he said, "She never cried. After, I mean. She doesn't cry about it now, but she goes very quiet sometimes when she thinks I'm not watching." Valor felt something shift in his chest that he did not try to name. "Kaelin," Celine said quietly. The boy glanced at her and then back at Valor. He said, "I'm Kaelin Arden." "I know," Valor said. "Do you know the other part?" Valor held the boy's gray gaze and said, "Yes." For a moment, nothing moved. The settlement was still. His soldiers were still. The highlands around them held the silence of a thing that had been waiting 9 years to be said and had just been said in 7 words, and the air had the quality of a held breath. Then the boy nodded, once, with a seriousness that was exactly his mother's. He said, "Okay," and turned and walked back through the gate as if the conversation had been concluded and there were other things that needed attending to. Valor looked at Celine. She was looking at where the boy had gone, and her expression had that quality again, the clean, hard thing that he had first seen 9 years ago in the antechamber and had spent 9 years trying to categorize. He understood it better now, standing in the Ironwood Highlands with 40 soldiers behind him and the Empire coming apart at the seams. It was not anger. It was not grief. It was the face of a woman who had been handed a catastrophe and had decided with total practicality and total commitment to build something worth keeping from the ruins of it. She looked at him. She said, "You came for the boy?" "I came because the Empire needs..." "You came for the boy," she said again, and it wasn't an accusation, just a clarification, the kind a healer made when she needed the information to be accurate before she could proceed. He stopped. He thought about what he was going to say next, and then thought about what Celine Arden did when she was lied to, which was to notice it before the words had finished leaving his mouth, And he said, yes. And because it had been 9 years and I needed to know, don't. Her voice was even, quiet. Don't finish that sentence today. You don't have the right to that conversation yet. He closed his mouth. She looked at him for a moment longer and then she said, what is the empire dying from? He told her. The failing harvest, the border pressures, the shadow dominion incursions in the north that were escalating faster than anyone had predicted, the way the noble houses were beginning to calculate the mathematics of a king without an heir and find reasons to revisit old alliances. He told her efficiently, with the same quality he used in military briefings, because she was asking a practical question and she wanted practical information, and because talking about the problem was easier than standing in the silence of what was not yet being talked about. She listened. She asked two questions: the location of the northernmost confirmed Shadow Dominion breach, and the current disposition of the Eastern Garrison Reserves. Operational questions. He answered both, and some part of him noted with the distant precision of a man observing himself from a safer move that he was not surprised by the questions, because she had always been, underneath everything, someone who needed to know how bad the situation was before she decided what to do about it. The boy, she said when he finished. You said you need him. Yes. He's 9 years old. I know. You don't get to need him. Her voice was still even, but the quality underneath had changed, the way pressure changed in a room before a storm. He is not a resource. He is not a military asset. He is not the heir you didn't have because you chose a queen who hasn't been able to give you one. He is 9 years old, and he is mine, and anything involving him will be done on terms I set. I understand. I don't think you do yet. She looked at him with those steady eyes. But you're going to. Behind her in the settlement, something was happening. Velor noticed it the same moment his lead scout spoke sharply from behind him. Movement. Northern tree line. The wolves came out of the Highlands forest at the sound of the scout's voice. Not attacking, not yet, but arranged in a formation that someone had trained them to hold. A crescent that curved around the northern and eastern approaches to the settlement in a way that closed off the clean retreat routes from his party's position. Valor counted 8, then 12, then stopped counting because the number wasn't the point. The point was that every wolf in the formation was looking past him, past his 40 soldiers, toward the tree line at the northern edge of the clearing. Something was in the northern tree line. Not a wolf. Not anything he had a category for. The sound it made when it moved was wrong in the specific way that meant his soldiers were already reacting before he gave the order. Hands going to weapons, horses shifting, the particular tightening of a formation under pressure. The air had changed. The mineral sharpness of the Highland water had been replaced by something colder, something with the quality of darkness that had no heat source, a cold that came from the absence of something rather than the presence of something. Shadow Dominion. They had followed him, or they had been here already, and he had led 40 soldiers directly into a position where they were between the Shadow Dominion and a settlement they had been tracking for months, because miracle children drew both kings and darkness, and he had not thought that through clearly enough. He turned back to Celine to say something, a warning, an order, he wasn't sure which, and she was already looking past him toward the northern tree line with the expression of someone who had encountered this before and had operational protocols for it. Then the gate of the settlement opened behind her. Kaelin came through the gate at a walk. He was 9 years old, and he was walking toward the northern tree line, and his hands were open at his sides, and his face had the specific settled quality of someone who was not performing calm and was not managing fear, and was simply, fundamentally, untroubled by what was coming out of the forest. Celine said, Kaelin, not an order, not a warning. The specific kind of voice that meant she had had this conversation before and had made peace with it and still found it difficult every time. The boy said, without turning, It's all right, Ma. The thing in the northern tree line came through into the clearing. Valor had fought Shadow Dominion creatures in the northern garrison campaigns. He knew what they looked like. This was larger than what he had encountered, larger than the intelligence reports had prepared him for, and it moved with the specific weight of something that understood it was the most dangerous thing in any space it occupied. His 40 soldiers held position with the discipline of people who had been trained for this and were also, privately, recalculating the terms of the engagement. Kaelin Arden walked forward and stopped 12 feet from the creature. He looked at it. The creature stopped moving. What happened next was not something Valor could describe accurately in language, because the language for it didn't exist in any framework he had for cataloging military engagements. The boy stood still and the creature was still, and something moved between them. Not visible, not audible, not anything that registered on the physical instruments Valor used to assess situations. But it registered. He felt it the same way he had felt the bond resonance in the throne hall 9 years ago. In his back teeth, in his sternum, in the specific frequency that bypassed cognition and went directly to the part of him that predated argument. The creature, after 18 seconds, which Valor would know because he counted them, turned and walked back into the northern tree line. The wolves in the crescent formation relaxed in sequence from north to east, a ripple of released tension that moved through the formation with a precision that spoke to coordination he had not seen in wild wolves and had rarely seen in trained military animals. The clearing was quiet. Valor looked at his lead scout. His lead scout looked back at him with the expression of someone who was revising several foundational assumptions in real time. He looked at Celine. She was looking at her son with the clean, hard expression, and underneath it, barely visible, something that was not fear and was not pride, and was the specific ache of a person watching someone they love exist in a way that makes the world larger and more dangerous simultaneously. Kaelin turned around. He walked back to his mother and stood beside her, and he was 9 years old, and he looked at Valor with those gray eyes and said, "They've been coming more often, since the beginning of last month." Valor said, "I know." "The whole North is like this, not just here." "I know." The boy considered him. "Are you going to do something about it?" Valor looked at his son, and at his son's mother, and at the wolves still holding the eastern edge of the clearing, and at the northern tree line where something massive had just walked back into the dark because a 9-year-old had asked it to. He said, "Yes." Kaelin nodded, the same single nod as before, the same seriousness, the same quality of a thing concluded. And then from the forest behind the eastern edge of the clearing, where no Shadow Dominion creature should have been able to approach without the wolves detecting it, came the specific sound of steel being drawn. Not one blade. Many. Valor's lead scout shouted. His soldiers turned east. The wolves turned east. The clearing erupted into the organized chaos of a formation under unexpected assault. And in the first 3 seconds of it, before he could locate Celine, before he could reach Kaelin, before his own sword was clear of its sheath, he heard a voice he had not expected in the Ironwood Highlands, carrying over the sound of steel and the growling of wolves and the boots of soldiers repositioning in the frost-hardened clearing. A voice he knew. A voice from the palace. And what that voice was saying, cutting through the chaos with the specific clarity of someone who had prepared this speech in advance and was not surprised by any of what was happening, was his wife's name. Not Seraphine, not the queen. The voice was giving an order, in the name of Seraphine Valoris, to secure the child by any means necessary, because someone in the Imperial Palace had known about Kaelin Arden before Valor's scouts had, before his intelligence reports, before the frontier rumors had made it to the king's ear. Someone had been watching the Ironwood Highlands for a very long time,
and they had let Valor ride into it first. "They will," he said, "because they would. Because whoever had built this room had thought about exits. How many of your people can fight?"
14 adults. Most aren't trained soldiers. 6 of them are better than soldiers." That was a specific kind of answer, the kind that came from someone who had assessed resources under pressure before. He looked at her. "The 6. Get them to the east wall. I'm not handing you my people. I'm not asking you to hand me anything. I'm asking you to position them on the east wall because that's where your settlement breaks, if this lasts more than another 4 minutes, and we need that wall held." She looked at him for half a second, the assessment, the calculation, and then she looked at the clearing and the eastern engagement and did her own 4-minute math and said, "Telvar, Ren, get the others east wall." Loud enough to carry into the settlement without being loud enough to carry across the clearing. 2 men appeared from inside the gate within seconds.
They had weapons already. They moved to the east wall without additional instruction, which told Valor they'd run this drill before, which told him something about how Selene Arden had spent the last 9 years. He turned back to the eastern engagement. His 32 soldiers were holding, but the word holding was doing significant work. The eastern formation's primary effort had shifted. It wasn't pushing hard for the soldiers anymore. It was trying to get around them, to get into the clearing interior, to get to the settlement gate, and that movement told him the objective was not to kill his soldiers. The objective was Kaelin, the voice he had recognized. He replayed it now. 3 seconds of chaos filtered through the specific attention of a military mind that had learned to extract signal from noise. The order had been given by someone whose voice carried the cadence of palace training, the flat enunciation of imperial court speech, slightly elevated in pitch for projection, not in panic. Someone who had given orders before. Someone with rank. He knew everyone in the palace with rank. The voice hadn't belonged to any of them. That meant either someone new, or someone who had been in the palace long enough to learn the cadence without being in the formal command structure. Household staff, administrative rank, or someone who was present in the palace regularly enough to absorb it. A visitor, a frequent ally, someone who moved through the court's peripheral spaces. He filed it. There wasn't time for it now, but he filed it because the voice was a thread, and threads needed pulling before they got cut. "They're not here to kill your soldiers," Kaelin said from behind him. Valor turned. The boy had not moved toward the settlement gate. He was standing 2 feet to the left of where Selene had stopped, watching the eastern engagement with the same catalog expression. "I know," Valor said. "They want me." "Yes." Kaelin looked at him with those gray eyes. "If I walk out there, they stop hitting your men." "No." The word came out with more force than he intended, which was something he noted with the detached part of his mind that was always watching how he used force. He said it again, controlled. "No. You don't walk out to hostile forces on the assumption they'll honor an unspoken arrangement. It's not an assumption. Someone gave the order. Someone with enough authority to organize this." The boy spoke with the deliberate specificity of someone who had been taught to parse situations rather than react to them. "That person needs me intact, or they wouldn't have bothered with all of this. They'd have just..." He paused, and for a moment the 9 years of him showed in the pause. A child understanding something that children shouldn't have to understand. "Done it differently." Valor looked at his son for 2 seconds. He said, "You are not the solution to this problem." "I can be. Not in a way I'm willing to use." Kaelin absorbed that. He didn't argue it, which was either deference or the tactical assessment of someone who had decided the argument could happen later. He said, "The wolves on the eastern perimeter. If I ask them, they'll press the eastern flank." Valor looked at the eastern engagement. The flank pressure was exactly what his 32 soldiers needed and didn't have. He said, "Do it." Kaelin looked toward the eastern tree line. He didn't speak. He didn't gesture. Whatever he did was internal, the way command sometimes was in people who had enough native authority that the outward signals were redundant. But within 10 seconds, the wolves that had been holding the crescent formation broke their positions and hit the eastern flank of the hostile formation from the tree line side, and the engagement restructured itself around the new pressure. It bought time. It didn't buy resolution. Selene moved up beside him. She'd kept one hand near the knife at her belt throughout all of it, the flat pragmatism of a frontier healer who understood that the same hands that fixed damage also sometimes had to prevent it. She said, quietly, "The voice you heard, do you know it?" "No, palace cadence, not palace rank." "How many people in your court travel back and forth to other houses frequently enough to absorb palace speech patterns without holding a formal position?" He looked at her. "That's a specific question." "It's the right question." She was watching the eastern engagement. "Someone who knows how to sound like the palace, but doesn't hold an official seat. Someone who your intelligence apparatus wouldn't have flagged as a threat because they don't show up in the command structure. A liaison," he said, "or a household visitor. Someone who spends time in the palace socially rather than administratively." He followed the logic. "Someone in Seraphine's social circle." Selene said nothing. The saying nothing had weight. He said, Say what you're thinking. I've been thinking it for 9 years, she said. I don't know that now is the time to start saying it. It's exactly the time. She looked at him with those eyes, steady and measuring. Seraphine knew about Kaelin before you did. He didn't flinch. He was a man who had learned not to flinch at things he needed to look at clearly. How long? Based on the first time someone came looking that wasn't scouts or traitors? 3 years. Maybe 3.5. 3 years, he repeated. The first time was discreet enough that I thought it was coincidence. The second time I moved us deeper into the highlands. After that I started building the perimeter. 3 years. His wife had known about his son for 3 years and had not said a word, had sat across from him at every council meeting and every diplomatic dinner, and every morning the palace conducted its ordinary business, and had said nothing. He processed that. He put it somewhere he could get to it later and built a wall around the now to keep the later from flooding it. He said, "The engagement isn't sustainable at this density. We need to break the eastern formation and create a gap wide enough to extract the settlement's civilians through the quarry passage. The exit's covered. Not if we give them a reason to pull people off the ridge." He looked at the settlement's north wall, at the ridge above it, at the three archer positions. "How far is the quarry exit from the ridge?" 200 yards northeast. If the archer's attention is on the settlement, they're looking south and west. The exit is northeast of their position. There's a 60-degree gap in their coverage. Celine worked that geometry. She said, "If they're disciplined, they'll have positioned for that gap." If they're disciplined. But they're private hire, not garrison soldiers, because there's no garrison commander willing to sign their name to an extraction operation targeting a child who hasn't been announced to the court yet. Private hire is capable and motivated, and also frequently overconfident about coverage calculations when they think the target is contained. She looked at him. "You sound very certain about how private hire thinks." "I've used it," he said. She absorbed that without apparent judgment, the same way she absorbed everything that was a fact rather than a position. She said, "What do you need?" "Your 6 fighters to hold the east wall, your settlement's non-combatants to move in groups of 4 to the quarry passage starting in the next 3 minutes. Kaelin in the second group, not the last." "First group," she said. "Second. First group draws the initial reaction and tells us whether the exit is covered. If it's clear, second group goes immediately behind." She didn't like it. He could see that in the set of her jaw, the half second of processing where she was weighing the logic against the instinct. The instinct was to put Kaelin first out of danger, first through any door. The logic said that the first person through an uncovered exit was the person who confirmed it was uncovered. She understood both, and the calculation was visible in her face, and she made it cleanly. She said, "Second group." She went to organize the movement, and he turned back to the eastern engagement, where his soldiers were holding with the wolf pressure making the difference, but not making enough difference, and he made the assessment that he had approximately 3 more minutes before the eastern formation adapted to the wolf tactics. Because the wolves were effective, but they were also predictable, herding pressure from the flanks, and trained fighters with enough experience learned to reverse pressure a herding formation by pushing into the gap it created at the center. He turned to the 3 nearest of his personal guard. "With me. We're going into the eastern engagement." His lead scout, Davin, said, "My lord, eastern formation is adapting. We press the center before they complete the adaptation. Move." They moved. What happened in the next 4 minutes was not the organized clarity of a rehearsed battle, but the specific, loud, proximate chaos of a clearing engagement where the variables were multiplying faster than any single commander could track. Valor fought the way he had always fought, not beautifully, not in the manner of men who had the luxury of style. He fought with the pragmatic efficiency of someone who had learned early that the objective was survival and resolution, and that everything else was theater. He was aware, throughout, of where Kaelin was. Not because he was watching, he couldn't afford to watch, but because some part of him had started tracking the boy the moment he'd walked out of the settlement gate, the way a new wound tracked itself in the awareness without requiring active attention, always present at the edge of consciousness, its status continuously updated. The Eastern Formation Center held for 2.5 minutes and then broke. Not a collapse, a reorganization, the kind that meant whoever was commanding them had recognized the center was lost and was pulling the pressure north to try to flank around the wolves. He let it go. The gap it created was wide enough. He pulled back to the settlement gate. Celine was there. "First group is through," she said. Her face had a quality of controlled tension, the kind that meant the control was doing real work. "Exit was clear. Second group is moving." "Kaelin." "Second group, moving." He nodded. He wanted to ask something else and recognized that the something else wasn't operational and stopped himself. He said, "Third group." 30 seconds behind. The engagement around them was reorganizing, the hostile formation pulling back to consolidate, which usually meant they were waiting for a new instruction from command. Someone in the tree line was reassessing. That was the vulnerability window. Reassessment took time, and the time between a commander's recognition that the current approach had failed and the execution of the new approach was the window that everything depended on. He said, "Go." She went. He held the eastern engagement with his remaining soldiers for the 2 minutes it took, which was the longest 2 minutes he could remember in recent operational experience, not because of the physical difficulty, but because of what was on the other side of it and the specific flavor of uncertainty that came from not knowing whether the exit was still clear. The hostile formation's second adaptation came with reinforcements from the ridge. The archers had repositioned. They'd figured out the quarry exit. He heard it from the northeast, the sound of an engagement at range, the crack of arrows and return fire, and then Davin's voice from behind him saying, "Northeast engagement, the exit." Faelor broke from his position and went northeast at a run and did not think about whether it was a tactically sound decision and did not catalog the operational variables, because the variables had collapsed into one and the one was at the quarry exit. He came through the northern tree line into the quarry approach, and the situation was 6 of Selene's fighters holding a position near the exit against 4 archers who had repositioned from the ridge faster than he had calculated, which meant they had horses or had anticipated the gap and pre-staged for it, which was a more sophisticated operation than private hire usually ran, which meant something about the quality of the people Seraphine had found. And Celine was at the quarry exit with Kaelin, not through it yet, because the archers had the angle covered and she had stopped rather than pushed through into covered ground, which was correct. And she was using the quarry wall as cover, which was also correct. And she was looking at the situation with the expression of someone who was very clearly calculating whether her 6 fighters plus 2 of Valor's soldiers could create enough coverage for a 20-second dash across 20 yards of open ground. The math didn't work. He could see her running it and arriving at the same conclusion. He came around the quarry wall and put himself between the archer's angle and the exit, and Davon and 2 others came with him and closed the coverage gap on the eastern side. And Celine looked at him and he looked at her and he said, "Go." She said, "You're standing in..." "I'm aware. Go." She went. She had Kaelin's arm and she moved with the flat, committed speed of a decision already made. No hesitation in the execution, and they crossed the 20 yards in the time it took Valor and his soldiers to make themselves enough of a problem for the 4 archers that the archers' attention was on them rather than the exit. An arrow hit the quarry wall 3 inches from Valor's left shoulder and left a mark in the stone. 3 inches. He did not look at the mark. He held the position until the sound of movement through the exit stopped. Then he moved. Bam. The quarry passage was 300 yards of low stone and bad light and the smell of standing water and old iron. Valor moved through it with 5 soldiers, and the grim awareness that his eastern engagement force had been left behind in the clearing, which meant 27 men who were either holding, retreating, or worse, and he did not have the information to know which. He would know at the other end. He cataloged it and kept moving. The passage exit came out onto a rocky slope above a dry creek bed. Enough tree cover to make the approach from the clearing difficult. Enough sight lines to give a defensive position time to react. Celine's settlers were there. Approximately 30 people, organized into the quiet, conserved stillness of a group that had been briefed to wait without advertising themselves. Kaelin was there. He was sitting on a flat rock with his back against the slope, and he was not performing calm. He was simply calm. The specific calm of someone who had accepted the situation's reality without being crushed by it. He looked up when Valor came through the exit, and his expression said, "You're here. And that's relevant information, and I'll file it. Valor came to a stop 6 feet from him and put his hands on his knees and pulled one full breath. Celine came around from the tree line. She'd been doing perimeter assessment. He understood immediately from the way she moved, checking the slope, the creek bed sight lines, the approach angles. She had a cut on her right forearm, not deep, the kind that came from a grazed edge rather than a direct hit. She had not mentioned it. He said, "Let me see that." She looked at the cut as if she'd forgotten it was there. "It's nothing. Let me see it." She looked at him with the expression that meant she was deciding whether the argument was worth the energy and concluded it wasn't. She held out her arm. He looked at the cut. She was right that it wasn't serious. Clean edge, not deep, already beginning to close. But his hands were on her arm, and the last time he had been close enough to touch her had been 9 years ago in an antechamber with a water pitcher between them, and this was different in approximately every possible way. He let go. She pulled her arm back and looked at him and said, "How bad is the eastern position?" "I don't know yet. I left 27 soldiers holding the engagement and the hostile formation. Outflanked when we broke the center, probably regrouping. They lost their primary objective and their secondary containment both. Whatever comes next is the commander's call, and the commander is taking instructions from someone who is going to be unhappy with the field report." Celine was quiet for a moment. Then she said, "They'll come back." "Yes." "Better resourced." "Yes." She looked at the slope, at the 30-some settlers waiting in the tree cover, at the dry creek bed below. Then she looked at him. "We can't stay in the highlands." He said, "No." "You're going to say we need to come to the capital." "I was going to ask," he said carefully, "not say." She looked at him with the flat assessment that had not softened in 9 years. "That's a diplomatic distinction." "It's an accurate one." "Vaelor." She said his name with the weight of someone who had been carrying it for a long time and had decided to put it down directly in front of him. "If I take Kaelin into the capital, I am walking him into the center of whatever Seraphine has been building toward for 3 years. I am walking him into a court that doesn't know he exists, into a palace where someone just organized a professional extraction operation against a 9-year-old, into a political structure where his existence is either the solution to an empire's succession problem or the reason everyone who wants power decides he needs to disappear." He said, "I know." "And you're still asking?" "I'm asking because the alternative is that he stays out here where the Shadow Dominion is escalating and Seraphine's people know the location and the Empire can't send garrison support without announcing what it's supporting. And the Highlands gets harder and narrower around you until the next operation doesn't come with the element of partial incompetence that let you get through the quarry exit today." She was quiet. She was looking at the dry creek bed. He said, "I can't protect him from here." She turned on that. Fast, the way she moved when something landed wrong. "You don't get to say that." "Celine, you don't get to use protection as a reason to want him in your orbit. You don't get to walk into the Highlands after 9 years and start talking about protection like you've been thinking about it all that time." Her voice was not raised, but it had pressure behind it, the kind that came from something that had been held at a steady temperature for a very long time. "I have been protecting him. With no resources, no garrison, no imperial anything, because you made a decision in a throne hall that put him here. And I built a life around keeping him safe with what I had. And you do not get to arrive and decide that my protection isn't enough and your version is better." He held her gaze. He did not defend himself because the defense would be true and would also be beside the point, which was that she was right. She had protected Kaelin. She had done it with 40-odd settlers and a pack of frontier wolves and the specific competence of someone who had never had the option of being incompetent. He said, "I know, you're right, and the situation has changed in a way that what you've built here isn't enough anymore, and I don't say that to diminish what you built. I say it because 3 years ago Seraphine knew about Kaelin, and today she sent a force into the Highlands, and the next force will be better, and I need you to let me try to make it right." She looked at him for a long moment. The dry creek bed. The settlers in the tree cover. Kaelin, still sitting on his flat rock, not pretending he wasn't listening to every word of this. She said, quietly, "You don't get to make it right. You understand that?" "Yes." "You can try to fix what's in front of us. That's different." "I know that too." She looked at him one more time, the full assessment, and then she looked at Kaelin and something moved between them. Not words, just the practiced communication of two people who had lived closely enough together that the full conversation could happen in a look. Kaelin said, "I want to see the capital." Celine closed her eyes briefly, opened them. She said, "We'll need 3 days to prepare the settlement for an extended absence. Safe houses, supply caches, someone to maintain the wolf perimeter." "We can cover that," Valor said. "We cover it. Not your soldiers, my people." She held that line. "And when we get to the capital, Kaelin is introduced on my terms, or not introduced at all. I decide how. I decide when. I decide who knows first." "Agreed. And Seraphine doesn't learn about this from anyone but you directly, on a timeline you choose." He said, "That timeline may be shorter than either of us would like." "I understand that. I'm saying when it happens because you chose it, not because she forced it." She held his gaze. "She's had enough things happen on her terms." He said, "Agreed." She nodded. The same single nod as her son, the same quality of a thing concluded. She went to organize the settlement preparation, and he stood on the rocky slope above the dry creek bed and looked at the tree cover and the highlands beyond it and tried to locate, somewhere in the honest accounting of himself, whether he had just made the right decision or the decision that was most comfortable to make from a position of finally having found what he'd spent 9 years pretending he wasn't looking for. He couldn't locate the answer clearly. He added it to the list of things he was going to have to live with, regardless of the answer. So, 3 days in the highlands with Selene Ardine's settlement was 3 days of a specific kind of discomfort that Valor had not cataloged before. It was not the discomfort of an unfamiliar situation. He had operated in frontier conditions, slept in campaign environments, eaten field rations for months at a time. Physical discomfort was familiar enough to be almost companionable. This was the discomfort of watching someone run something well. Selene's settlement was 43 people, of whom 9 were children. It operated with the efficiency of a supply chain, not the scrappy improvisation that frontier settlements usually produced. There were duty rotations, food stores organized by caloric density and preservation method, a water management system for the highland streams that included a filtration setup he had not seen outside of a military engineering unit. The 6 fighters she had positioned on the east wall moved like people who drilled regularly and were not surprised by drills. The wolves on the perimeter responded to hand signals that he did not know and had not seen before. On the second day, he watched Celine run a medical assessment on a child who had taken a minor injury during the ambush chaos, a cut on the forearm, roughly the same location as her own injury, and she cleaned and dressed it with the specific, efficient tenderness of someone who had long since made peace with the fact that fixing hurt things was both a skill and a permanent obligation. The child was approximately 5, and she was calm throughout because Celine's voice was calm throughout. And the way she talked to the child while she worked was not the performance of reassurance, but the actual thing, the genuine steadiness of someone for whom this was just the work. He was standing 15 feet away, pretending to review a supply manifest. Devon appeared at his shoulder and said quietly, "She built this." "Yes." "All of it." "Yes." Devon was quiet for a moment. He was Valor's lead scout and had been for 6 years, which meant he was also one of approximately 4 people in the Empire whose judgment Valor trusted on assessments he hadn't made himself. He said, "The boy." Valor said, "What about him?" "He spent an hour this morning with the Ironmaw wolves, not handling them, sitting with them." Devon paused. 3 of the older wolves, alpha tier. They were deferring to him. Valor said nothing. "I've been in Frontier Garrison for 11 years, Devon said. "I've never seen a wolf defer to anything younger than it." "I know." "He's 9. "I know." Devon was quiet again. Then, "What happens when the court sees him?" "Everything changes," Valor said. It was not a complicated answer. It was just the true one. Kaelin found him that evening at the northern perimeter, where Valor had been doing his own assessment of the wolf positions. Not to manage them, he was clear on the fact that he had no authority over them, but because understanding the perimeter was how he processed unsettled situations. He stood at the northern edge of the settlement's territory and watched the highlands go dark in the way they did, quickly and completely, with the specific darkness of terrain that didn't have anything reflecting the sky back at it. Kaelin came and stood beside him. He didn't speak for a while. This was, Vaelor was learning, characteristic. The boy processed before he spoke, and the processing happened in a quiet that was not uncomfortable but was demanding, because it required the person with him to also stay in the silence rather than filling it. Vaelor stayed in the silence. Finally, Kaelin said, "She didn't tell me about you for 3 years." Vaelor said, "I didn't know about you." "I know. She told me that too." A pause. "She said you didn't know, not that you would have done differently if you did." He was quiet. "That's honest." "She's like that." Kaelin was looking at the dark highlands. "I used to ask her if you were a bad person. She said you were a person who made a decision that hurt her, and that those were different categories, and that I should learn to tell the difference." Vaelor looked at the dark. "Are you," Kaelin said, "a bad person?" "Yes." He thought about how to answer that with the honesty the boy's question deserved, which was the same honesty Celine would have used, direct and without the comfortable hedging of someone managing their own image. He said, "I'm a person who put a system's needs above a person's life and thought that made me right instead of just powerful. I've been finding out the difference." Kaelin absorbed that the way he absorbed everything, not quickly, but completely. Then, "The Empire, is it really dying?" "It's failing. There's a distinction. It's not irreversible yet, but the things holding it together are the things I built 9 years ago from that decision, and they were not built to last." "Because you built them from something wrong." "Yes." The boy thought about that for a long time, long enough that the darkness settled fully and the first of the highland stars appeared, and Vaelor waited, because waiting was what the boy required. Kaelin said, "If I help, it's not because of the Empire." "I know." "It's because of the people in it, the 400,000 in the frontier territories that you told her about, the ones in the garrison towns." He paused. "The ones like Derek's Crossing." Vaelor said, "Derek's Crossing?" "She told me about it. Where she went last spring. The ones who died." Kaelin was quiet. "She remembers all their names." He said, "Yes, I know." "I want to learn them," Kaelin said. "The names. When we get to the capital, I want to write them down." Something moved in Vaelor's chest that he made no attempt to categorize. He said, "I'll make sure you have what you need for that." Kaelin nodded once, looked at the dark for a moment longer, then turned and walked back toward the settlement with the unselfconscious directness of someone who had concluded what they needed to conclude. Vaelor stayed at the northern perimeter until the highland dark was complete. Bust. The caravan reached the edge of the Duskwall Ridge on the afternoon of the fourth day. Celine had needed 3 days. She had taken three and finished 1 hour early, which was not a surprise to him in the way it would have been a week ago, and came down off the ridge into the frontier grasslands that marked the beginning of the Empire's properly mapped territory, with the specific quality of a group that knew exactly how exposed they were becoming and had made the calculation. His 27 soldiers from the Eastern engagement were there. All 27. He stopped when he saw the count and let himself feel the uncomplicated relief of it for exactly 3 seconds. Davin had gotten them out through the northern tree line when the hostile formation had pulled to follow the quarry exit. 3 wounded, none critical. He looked at the field report and found what he needed in it. The hostile formation had not pursued past the ridge, which meant they had standing orders to operate within the highlands and not extend into the frontier proper, which meant someone had been very careful about jurisdiction, which meant someone in the court had been very careful about what couldn't be officially traced. He filed that with the voice, with the 3-year operational timeline, with the coordination quality that exceeded standard private hire. He was building a picture, and the picture was taking shape faster than he was comfortable with. They made camp at the ridge boundary, and Celine's people integrated with his soldiers with the wary efficiency of groups who had been through a crisis together and had not yet decided if that made them allies. He watched it from the camp's perimeter, that process, the small negotiations of shared fire and supply, and the specific language of people who were calibrating trust against experience. Kaelin moved between both groups without apparent difficulty. He sat with Selene's settlers for a meal, and then walked over and sat with three of Valor's soldiers who were dressing the worst of the three wounds, and he watched the dressing with his catalog attention, and after a moment said something to the soldier doing the dressing that made the soldier stop and adjust his technique, and the wounded man's expression went from a managed grimace to a lesser version of it. Valor said, across the fire to Selene, "He gave them medical instruction." Selene didn't look up from the supply count she was doing. "He's been my apprentice since he was 6. He knows more field medicine than most garrison surgeons." Valor was quiet. He said, "His education is comprehensive." "Who taught him?" "I did. The settlement's experienced people did. 3 years ago, I traded 2 seasons of medical provision to a retired military scholar in Greywater for language and history instruction." She looked up then, briefly. "He reads in 3 languages. His mathematics outpaced mine by 8. His tactical thinking..." She paused, and the pause had something complicated in it, something between pride and the specific grief of recognizing that a child's gifts exist in response to a world that requires them. "Is something he developed himself. From watching. From the wolves. From the frontier." Valor looked at his son sitting with his soldiers across the fire. He said, "I should have been part of that." Selene said, "Yes." No elaboration, no cushioning.
The honest acknowledgement that something had been absent and the absence had mattered. He said, "I'm sorry." She looked at him then. Not the assessment look. Something quieter. Something that had the quality of something that had been waiting long enough to be tired of waiting. She said, "I know you are." She went back to the supply count. He looked at the fire. He was going to have to tell the court. He had known that from the moment Kaelin had come through the settlement gate. There was no version of what happened next that did not require walking into the court with this truth and placing it in a room full of people who had their own calculations to run about what it meant. The noble houses. The military command. The ambassadors. Seraphine. Seraphine, who had known for 3 years and who had sent a force into the highlands, and who was waiting in the capital right now with the expression she wore in public. Careful, composed, the face of a queen who had built her position with intelligence and patience and the specific willingness to wait for the right moment. He had married her because she was exactly that. He had thought it was a qualification. He was currently revising that assessment. He looked across the fire at his son and his son's mother and at the 27 soldiers and 30-some settlers around a shared fire at the edge of an empire that was failing, and he understood, clearly, without the buffer of any remaining self-deception, that everything that was going to happen from this point forward was the consequence of a choice he had made in an antechamber 9 years ago, and that the consequence had a face, and the face was gray-eyed and 9 years old and had spent an hour deferring to wolves. The fire burned low. Somewhere behind them, in the darkness of the highlands they had just left, something screamed. The specific sound of a Shadow Dominion creature, too far away to be an immediate threat, close enough to be a reminder. The screaming stopped. Then one of his soldiers, the one Kaelin had corrected, said, sharply, "My lord!" Valor turned. Coming out of the darkness from the southeast, not the highlands' direction, not the direction of threat, but from the frontier grasslands below, from the direction of the road that connected the capital to the frontier territories, was a rider. Alone. No escort. Moving at a pace that meant either the horse was damaged, or the rider had something that required immediate delivery and had overridden judgment about the horse. The rider came into firelight. Valor recognized the courier colors. Imperial House, his direct office, the specific seal that only 3 people in the palace had the authority to put on an urgent dispatch. The courier came off the horse before it fully stopped. "My lord!" She was breathing hard. She had been riding for hours, possibly through the night. From the chamberlain's office, marked urgent at the highest priority, he took the dispatch. The seal was intact. He broke it. He read it once. He read it twice because the first reading produced a result that he ran through the filter of every operational assumption he had made in the last 4 days and found that the result did not change on second reading. He looked up. Selene was watching him. She read his face the way she always read his face, the healer's assessment, the honest accounting of what she saw there. And he watched her see whatever his face was showing. She said quietly,
What?
He said, the Shadow Dominion has breached the Northern Fortress Line. Not the frontier outposts. The Fortress Line. Ashguard, Greywood Tower, and Ironwall have all fallen. He paused. They're inside the Empire now. She was very still. He said, the dispatch is dated 4 days ago, while we were in the Highlands. She said, for 4 days. They've had 4 days. She stood up. Across the fire, Kaelin had stopped talking to the soldiers. He was looking at Valor with those gray eyes, and the specific quality of attention in them was not a child's attention, but something older, something that had always been there beneath the 9 years of him, and was now fully visible. Kaelin said, how far is Ironwall from the nearest settlement cluster? Valor said, 60 miles. How fast do they move? In open terrain, with a breached corridor. He stopped. Kaelin said, we need to move. He stood up. Now. And from the dark grasslands to the south, from the direction of the capital itself, came the sound that Valor had only heard twice before in his life and had hoped never to hear again. The low, structural resonance that meant something very large and very wrong was moving through the earth itself, the deep harmonic of Shadow Dominion presence that bypassed hearing and registered in the bone, not from the Highlands, from the south, from the direction they were going. Heading northeast, it had started from the south, from the capital corridor or somewhere along it, and was moving toward them only incidentally, its actual trajectory angled away toward the northern territories. Which meant it had already passed through something. He said, the frontier settlements along the capital road. Davin said from his left, Morrow's Crossing is 12 miles south, then Halden, then the Brackfield townships. Valor looked at the courier, who had not moved from where she'd dismounted. How old is this dispatch? I rode 4 days. It was sealed when I received it. 4 days ago, the fortress line had fallen. 4 days ago, while he had been in the Highlands organizing an extraction operation and cataloging the geometry of his own failures, the Shadow Dominion had been moving through the Empire's northern interior. The resonance faded, moving away as Kaelin had said, angling northeast, diminishing to a low vibration and then to nothing. The silence it left behind was the kind that asked questions. Celine said, Morrow's Crossing. Yes, Valor said. How many people? Approximately 800. She was quiet. He could see her doing what he was doing, running the time calculation against the movement rate, arriving at the same conclusion from a different direction. He said, we need to move before dawn. They moved before dawn. The capital road was 60 miles. He pushed the pace to the edge of what the settlers could sustain without casualties. Not the military pace he would have set with only soldiers, but not the careful progression of a civilian caravan. Celine did not argue the pace. She set it with him, matching what he established, adjusting for the settlers at the back of the column without requiring him to manage it. He rode at the front. She rode at the rear. They did not speak for 11 miles, which was the distance to Morrow's Crossing. Morrow's Crossing was intact. He registered that with the specific relief of a calculation that produces a better result than expected, and then registered immediately after that, the reason it was intact was apparent from 300 yards out. The settlement had been evacuated. No people in the fields, no smoke from the chimneys at the normal morning cooking hour. Gates open, which meant the evacuation had been organized and had not panicked. A panicked evacuation closed gates against pursuit. An organized one left them open to signal the settlement was empty and not worth stopping for. Someone had warned Morrow's Crossing. He rode through and did not stop. Halden had not been warned, or had been warned too late. The distinction mattered, and he did not have enough information yet to make it accurately. What he had was the evidence of Halden from the road, which was enough to read without entering the settlement, and which he read while keeping his formation moving because stopping the formation was the wrong call, and stopping to read the evidence more carefully would not change the evidence. Devon rode alongside him and said nothing, which was also a kind of information. He filed Halden the way he filed everything that needed filing for later, in the specific compartment where things went that were too large to carry in the present and had to be picked up again when the present gave enough room. Kaelin was riding beside Celine at the rear and had been for the last several miles.
He had not asked to come forward. He had not asked what Halden meant. He was 9 years old, and he understood what the evidence from the road was saying, and he was processing it in the Highland silence that he had inherited from his mother and had made his own. Valor rode another 4 miles before he trusted himself to think about Halden directly. Then he thought about it. He gave it 30 seconds of honest accounting, what it meant about movement rate, about the scale of what had come through the fortress line, about the gap between the dispatch date and current conditions, and then he folded the accounting into the operational picture and kept riding. The capital was 45 miles ahead. They saw the capital's signal fires at sundown of the second day. He said, "I've been making excuses for that chain of logic for 2 days." "I know," she said. "You're done making them now." It wasn't a question. He said, "Yes." Devon returned 40 minutes later with the garrison commander, a woman named Brex Solon, who had been a captain when Valor last updated his personnel records, and was apparently a commander now by virtue of the fact that everyone above her in the eastern garrison chain had been reassigned 3 weeks ago. She was 40, competent in the particular way of people who had done a job for a long time and had quietly resolved to keep doing it regardless of what changed around them, and she was operating on approximately 2 days without sleep. She gave him the field report standing in the road. The fortress line had fallen over 6 days, not 4. The dispatch had been delayed by 2 days at an intermediate post that Violor was going to have a detailed conversation with someone about when this was over. The northern interior breach was wider than the dispatch had indicated. There were 3 active Shadow Dominion incursion lines currently threading through the Empire's territory, the largest of which was the one moving northeast along the frontier road that they had felt from the ridge. The eastern garrison had not been redeployed to a pressure point. The eastern garrison had been pulled off the wall on a standing order. He said, "Whose order?" Brex Solon said, "The Queen Consort's office, 3 days ago. The order cited internal security requirements and pulled 2/3 of the eastern garrison to..." She paused with the expression of someone who had been turning a piece of information over for 3 days without being able to put it down. "To facilitate the closure of the eastern palace access points." He was very still. He said, "What access points?" "The eastern wing, the residential approach, the diplomatic corridor." She paused. "Every entrance to the palace that a returning king would use." The silence lasted approximately 3 seconds, which was long enough. He said, "And the noble houses? Current positions?" Brex Solon said, 14 of the 22 major houses have moved significant household forces into the capital over the last week. The movement was staggered, different stated purposes, but the timing..." She looked at him with the steady eyes of a person delivering information she had been hoping was wrong. "The timing converged on the same window. 14 of 22. He ran the math. 14 was enough for a council majority. 14 was enough to ratify a legal instrument without the king's signature if the instrument was framed correctly. 14 was enough to do the thing that someone had apparently been planning to do. That someone had apparently been planning to do since before the Shadow Dominion incursions had created the crisis that provided the cover. He said, "Where is the Queen Consort now?" Brex Solon said, "In the throne hall. She called a noble council session this morning." A pause. "The session is titled an emergency sovereignty instrument." He was quiet. Celine was standing 2 feet to his left. He did not look at her, because looking at her would break the operational containment he was maintaining, and the operational containment was the only thing currently holding the situation in a shape he could work with. But she was there, and her presence had the specific quality of someone who had known for 3 years that the moment they were in now was possible and had made their peace with the shape of it. He said, "How long has the session been running?"
4 hours.
He said, "Then we have time." He turned to Davon. "I need 6 of our best riders going into the Noble House districts right now. Not military. Civilian riders, personal delivery, my direct seal. I need to reach the 8 minority houses who haven't moved forces into the capital. I need them to delay their response to any council summons for..." Devon said, "My lord." He stopped. Devon was looking past him at something on the road south of their position. He turned. Coming north on the capital road was another rider, moving with the same driven urgency as the first courier, but in worse shape. The horse was lathered, and the rider was barely holding posture. Behind the rider, visible on the horizon, was something that was not a signal fire. It was larger than a signal fire. It was the color that certain compounds burned when they went up completely. It was coming from the direction of the palace, Botsit. They reached the capital's outer gate in 40 minutes, which was fast enough that two horses broke down on the approach and had to be abandoned. Valor rode through the outer district at a pace that cleared the road in front of him through the combined effect of the Imperial House banner and the specific quality of a formation moving with hostile intent through civilian space. The city was not in panic. It was in the controlled, suspended state that preceded panic. People not running, but positioned near their doorways, near their windows, near the particular places that human instinct chose when the situation was unresolved and waiting for resolution. He had seen it in garrison towns during siege approaches. He had seen it in council districts during succession crises. It was the face a city made when it knew something was wrong and hadn't yet been told what. He knew what. The fire was not the palace. It was the Eastern Administrative Complex, the building that housed the imperial records, the succession documentation, the original treaty instruments. It was burning with the specific totality of a fire that had been set deliberately and had been given time to establish before anyone was allowed to fight it. He registered what that meant while his horse was still moving and finished registering it by the time he reached the inner gate. The succession documentation, the record of the bond ceremony, the formal imperial records that establish bloodline, covenant, and the chain of legitimate authority. All of it in that building, all of it burning. Someone had decided to remove the foundation before removing the structure. He came through the inner gate, and the scene in the palace forecourt was organized in the specific way that told him immediately that it had been organized in advance. There were palace guard in positions that were not their standard deployment positions. Too many at the eastern approach. Not enough at the ceremonial front, the gap at the western access point that would not exist in a standard defensive arrangement, and existed now only if someone had placed people where they needed people and left the gaps where the gaps were acceptable. Because the king coming through the western access point was not the threat that had been planned for. Lord Commander Estin Vair was in the forecourt. He was Valor's senior military commander in the capital, 53 years old, 30 years in imperial service, the officer Valor had trusted most consistently with the most significant decisions. He was standing in the center of the forecourt with six palace guard around him and an expression that Valor had never seen on his face in 30 years of knowing it. It was the expression of a man who had made a decision he had not made lightly and was not going to pretend otherwise. Valor pulled up 6 feet from him and got down from his horse and said, "Estin." Vair said, "My lord." His voice was even, military even, the voice of a man who had trained the emotion out of operational communication so long ago that it took real work to put it back. "I would ask that you halt your formation at this point," he said. "I would ask that you explain to me why my Lord Commander is standing in my forecourt with palace guard between me and my own throne hall." Bear said, "Because the Noble Council is in session, and the Queen Consort's office has requested that access to the throne hall be restricted until the session is concluded. And you complied with that request. The request carried the authority of the Emergency Sovereignty Instrument, which has been ratified by 14 houses, and carries legal weight under Imperial Charter Article. I know what article it carries weight under." He said it without heat, which was harder than saying it with heat. He looked at Vair, at the face he had trusted for 30 years, at the expression on it that was not pleasure and was not pride, and was the specific expression of a man who had decided that legal authority and personal loyalty were two different obligations, and had, when they conflicted, chosen the one he had formally sworn to. "What does the instrument say?" Vair said, "The instrument establishes a regency protocol in the absence of a legitimate heir and pending the king's return from," he paused, "unauthorized frontier engagement." Unauthorized frontier engagement. Someone had formally characterized his ride into the highlands as unauthorized. He said, "The regency is named." "Yes." "Seraphine." "Yes." He stood in the forecourt of his own palace and looked at his Lord Commander and processed what had been built in the time he had been gone. It had not been built in 4 days. It had not been built in the weeks since the fortress line fell. This had been built in years, in the careful accretion of legal instruments and house relationships and administrative positioning that looked, from inside any individual moment, like normal court management, and looked, from the outside of the accumulated result, like a siege that had been prosecuted without a single visible act of war. She had not taken the empire from him. She had filled in around him, into every space he had left empty by being a king who governed systems better than he governed himself, until the space for him to stand had become very small and very surrounded. He had made it easy. He had made it easy because he had spent 9 years believing that the work of governing was enough, that managing the structure was enough, that if the system was sound, the person inside it was irrelevant. The person inside it had never been irrelevant. He said quietly, "You know about Kalin." Ver was very still. He said, "Someone in this court knew about the boy in the Highlands. Someone coordinated the operation in the Ironwood. That required access to my intelligence apparatus. That required someone inside the command structure." He held Ver's gaze. "Did you know?" Ver said, "I was informed of the boy's existence 2 months ago." "Informed by whom?" "The Queen Consort's office." He absorbed that. The clean, total blow of it, the way a thing you had already half prepared for, still landed with full weight when it arrived. He said, "And the frontier operation?" Vare's jaw worked once. "I did not authorize it. I was informed after. I was told it was an internal security measure." "A security measure against a 9-year-old child?" "I was told the boy's existence posed a destabilizing risk to the succession." "His existence poses a stabilizing answer to the succession." He said it with the flat precision of a blade edge. "He is the heir. He has the blood. He has the gift. You have seen the field reports about the frontier incursions. You have seen what happens in every crisis point where the boy appears. You know what I am telling you." Ver was quiet. He said, "You should have come to me." Ver said, "I tried to reach you. You were in the Highlands. The message I sent was..." He stopped. "I don't know what happened to the message." He knew what had happened to the message. He knew the way he knew the arithmetic of the Eastern Garrison pull and the administrative complex fire and the timing of the emergency sovereignty instrument. He knew it the way he knew anything when he stopped letting himself not know it. He said, "Step aside, Esten." Ver said, "My lord, I cannot... I'm not asking as your king." He met the man's eyes. "I'm asking as the man who trusted you with more than anyone else in this empire for 30 years and is asking you to decide which obligation is actually primary when the moment requires it." The forecourt was very quiet. He was aware of his 40-odd soldiers behind him. He was aware of Selene somewhere in the formation, and Kalin, and 30-some Highland settlers who had absolutely no business being in the capital forecourt and were there anyway because the world had not consulted them about whether it was convenient. Ver looked at him for a long moment. He stepped aside. Valor walked through the palace gate, and his formation came with him. The throne hall was not what he expected, which meant someone had been managing his expectations deliberately and had done it well enough that the actual hall was still a shock. There were 200 people in it, noble representatives, household heads, administrative officials, military officers he recognized by face but had not authorized to be in this building in this formation. They were arranged in the hall's formal alignment, the seating structure of a recognized council session, which meant the session had been given enough time to establish its procedural legitimacy. Seraphine stood at the front of the hall. She was dressed in the full regalia of the Imperial House, which meant someone had arranged for her to have access to the regalia stores, which meant someone in the palace administrative hierarchy had made that decision. She wore the formal crown of the Queen Consort, which she had not worn in public in 6 years, and she wore it with the specific ease of someone who had been trying it on in private for significantly longer than that. She turned when he came through the hall doors. Her face did what faces did in situations like this. If you knew how to read them. A brief recalibration. He was back. He was early. Something in the Highlands had resolved faster than the model predicted. Then the recovery,
the smooth resumption of the expression she had been wearing, which was composed and certain and had no surprise in it that she was willing to show. She said, "My lord," not "my king." "My lord," which was technically correct and was also, in this context, a precise instrument. "You've returned." He walked into the center of the hall. He was aware of the 200 people and of how they were reading the hall's new geometry. King at the center, queen at the front, and whatever existed between those two positions was the territory everyone in the room was quietly calculating about. He said, "Conclude the session." She said, "The session is proceeding under the authority of..." "I know what authority it's proceeding under. I said conclude it." She looked at him with the patient certainty of someone who had been waiting for this conversation for a very long time and had prepared every line of it. "The emergency sovereignty instrument has been ratified. The council has voted. The procedural requirements of Imperial Charter Article. Article 14 requires the king's documented absence or incapacity." He said it with the same flat precision. "I am present. I am not incapacitated. The conditions of Article 14 do not obtain. The documented absence provision requires..." "I know what it requires. I wrote the revision to that provision 6 years ago. I know every word of it." He held her gaze across the length of the hall. "The provision was written to protect the empire in the event of a king who could not return. Not a king who chose a different timeline." She said, "The timeline was chosen without council notification. The frontier engagement was conducted without military authorization. The Noble Council has a responsibility to..." "The Noble Council has been used." He said it loud enough for the hall to hear it, not as a performance, but as the most efficient way to speak to 200 people simultaneously. By someone who understood how to weaponize procedural legitimacy against the structure it was designed to protect. He looked at the hall. 14 houses ratified this instrument. I know which 14. I know the relationships between those houses and the Valerius family that Seraphine brought into this marriage. I know what the conversations that preceded ratification looked like, and I know how they were shaped, and I know that the urgency manufactured to make those conversations feel necessary was manufactured by the same person who benefited from their result. The hall was very quiet. He said, "The Eastern Administrative Complex is burning." Something moved through the room at that. The particular quality of people receiving information they had not had, recalculating in real time. He said, "Someone burned the succession documentation, the bond records, the foundational instruments of imperial legal authority." He let that sit for a moment. Someone who needed those documents to not exist before making a claim to legitimate authority. Because with those documents intact, the claim doesn't hold. Seraphine said, "The fire is under investigation. Who ordered the Eastern Garrison redeployment 3 days ago?" She said, "Internal security required. Who ordered it?" She held his gaze. She was still composed, which was the thing he had always genuinely admired about her, and was currently finding difficult to separate from the use to which the composure had been put. She said, "I exercise the authority my position provides for the protection of the palace in the king's absence." "You pulled 2/3 of the Eastern Garrison off the wall during a Shadow Dominion incursion." "To protect the palace." "From what?" She said, "From uncertainty." He looked at her across the hall. He had married her for this. For this exactness, this precision of language, the ability to say the right thing in a way that was technically true and structurally dishonest simultaneously. He had married her because she was good at the same things he was good at, and because he had believed, in the cold mathematics of that decision, that the overlap of skills was more durable than the bond the covenant had named. He had been wrong. He had spent 9 years being wrong. The only difference between then and now was that he was done paying the installments privately. He said, "The alliance you made with the noble houses, the operation in the Ironwood Highlands, the burning of the administrative records, the timing of the emergency sovereignty instrument." He was very quiet, very controlled. "These are not the actions of a queen protecting a palace. These are the actions of someone who has been building toward a specific outcome for years and used the Shadow Dominion crisis as the final condition." She said, "That is an extraordinary accusation." "Yes," he said, "it is." The hall waited. She said,
You have no evidence for... I have the boy. She stopped. The hall stopped. He said, Kaylin Arden, 9 years old, frontier-born, who calmed the Iron Maw wolves in under an hour, who stood in front of a Shadow Dominion incursion creature at Greywood and ended the engagement without a single soldier's injury, who carries the Imperial Alpha bloodline so clearly that every Alpha-blooded person in this room is going to feel it the moment he walks through those doors. He looked at her. He said, You burned the records because you knew. You've known for 3 years. You knew because you were watching for it. Because the one thing your position could never guarantee you, the one thing your valorous family's investment in this empire could never manufacture, was a legitimate heir. And when you found out one existed, a real one, blood true, covenant confirmed, you made a decision. Seraphine said, The child is illegitimate, born outside, born from the covenant bond. His voice cut across hers with the flat quality of a door closing. The bond that was acknowledged before 2,600 witnesses in this hall 9 years ago. Acknowledged and documented. Or it was documented until last night. She said, The bond was not claimed. The formal claiming did not proceed under imperial charterdom. The bond was acknowledged. The acknowledgement creates the bloodline recognition. You know this. You know this because you had someone research it 3 years ago when you found out about him, which is why you needed the records burned before you could move on the instrument. He watched her face do something she didn't want it to do. The composure held, but something shifted underneath it. The specific quality of a position that had been built very carefully and has just been told that someone knows where the foundation is cracked. She said, This is a king who disappeared into the frontier without authorization, who has returned with a woman and a child making extraordinary claims. Bring him in, Baylor said. Not to the room. Through the doors he had come in, to the formation waiting outside. Devon would hear it. Devon would understand. The hall waited. The doors opened. Kaylin walked in. He walked in with the directness of someone who had been told what was happening and had decided to be present for it with the same total commitment he brought to everything else. He was 9 years old, and he walked into a room of 200 people, into the political center of an empire he had grown up outside of, into the full attention of every person in the throne hall, and his pace did not change. He walked to Valor's position and stood beside him. The resonance came without ceremony. It was the same thing Valor had felt 9 years ago in this hall, the harmonic of the bond confirming itself, the alpha bloodline recognition that no court theater could manufacture. Every alpha-blooded person in the room felt it. He could see them feel it. The small physical adjustments, the quality of attention changing, the bodies registering what the minds were still catching up to. The 14 houses that had ratified the emergency sovereignty instrument contained 6 alpha-blooded heads. He watched all 6 of them. Seraphine watched them too. For the first time in the hall, her face showed something that was not composed certainty. She said, One child does not overturn a legally ratified instrument. Tell me, said a voice from the hall that Valor recognized as Lord Venn of House Moorcastle, one of the 8 minority houses, who had apparently arrived during the approach, what you were protecting the palace from when you burned the records. The hall shifted. He felt it. The distribution of pressure, the weight moving. Seraphine said, The fire is under investigation. You were in the administrative complex last night, said another voice. Lady Arik of House Selvane, one of the 14, which meant the 14 were not a monolith, which he had suspected. Your household steward was seen directing the building staff to evacuate the east wing before the fire was reported. Seraphine said, I will not be interrogated in this hall. You should be very concerned, Valor said quietly, about what happens when you stop being interrogated in this hall and start being interrogated outside it. She looked at him. He looked at her. 9 years of a marriage that had been built from 2 cold intelligences deciding that a political equation was the same thing as a life. 9 years of sitting across from her at table and knowing, in the specific way that people who are similarly skilled recognize each other, that she was running calculations the same way he was running them. That the distance between them was not a failure of warmth, but a feature of the architecture they had chosen. 9 years of a house that functioned, and an empire that ran, and a succession that did not resolve, and a northern war that would not end, and a bond that had never been formally unclaimed, and therefore had never, technically, been dissolved. He had thought for 9 years that the distance was the price of the correct decision. He was looking at what the distance had actually purchased. She said, very quietly, in a register that did not carry to the hall, "You can't prove the fire." He said, equally quiet, "I don't need to prove the fire. I need to stand in this hall with my son and let the people in it run the arithmetic. They already are." She said, "The Valerie's family will not accept. The Valerie's family's political position in this empire has been contingent on your position as queen."
"Your position as queen is contingent on a succession that you did not provide. The arithmetic has not been favorable to Valerie's for several years." He held her gaze. "King Aaron Valerius died without succession. His cousins are still fighting about the crown. There is no Valerius power structure to appeal to. There is only you, in this hall, with a ratification that is going to look significantly different in the next 20 minutes than it did this morning." She looked at him with the full intelligence she had always had, the cold and precise and genuinely impressive intelligence of a person who had played a very long game very well and was currently watching the endgame not resolve the way it had been designed to. Then she said something he had not prepared for. She said, "The Shadow Dominion didn't come through the fortress line by accident." He was still. She said, "The Northern Barrier System has a vulnerability. It's been there for 40 years. The previous administration knew about it. Your father knew about it. You inherited the assessment, but you were managing 12 other structural failures, and this one was old enough to seem stable." She held his gaze. "I knew about it. I told people who had an interest in using it." The hall was absolutely silent. He said, "You told the Shadow Dominion." She said, "I told people who communicate with the structures that coordinate the Dominion surface incursions. Indirectly. Through 3 intermediaries." She said it with the flat precision of someone who had decided that if the architecture was coming down, it was coming down completely. "I told them 6 months ago, before the council positioning, before the instrument, because the crisis was necessary. The succession crisis alone was not sufficient to move the 14 houses. A war crisis was." He was very still. The hall was very still. He said, "The people in Halden." She said nothing. He said, "The people in Halden are dead. Because you needed a war crisis." She said, "Every political structure requires..." "Say their names," Kaelin said. The voice was 9 years old and entirely level, and it landed in the hall's silence with the quality of something that had been traveling a long distance and had now arrived. Seraphine looked at the boy. Kaelin looked at her. He said, "The people in Halden. Say their names." She said, "I don't know their..." "That's what I thought," Kaelin said, and turned away from her with the specific economy of someone who has received a complete answer and has no further questions. He looked at his father. He said, "What do we do now?" Valor looked at the hall. 200 people, 14 houses in various states of reconsidering the arithmetic. The queen consort standing at the front with the composure of someone who had just confessed to a war crime in a room full of witnesses and was still calculating whether there was a move. He looked at his son, 9 years old, who had walked into the political center of an empire he had never been told he was part of and had asked the only question that mattered. He said, "Now we end it." And from the northern wall of the capital, 3 miles away and directly audible through the throne hall's high windows, the wall defense signals changed their pattern, not the steady interval of a maintained position. The rapid escalating pulse of a wall under direct contact. The Shadow Dominion had reached the capital. He understood her well enough to know she was not finished. People like Seraphine did not have a finished. They had the current move and the next one and the one after that, and the art of managing them was in removing the moves faster than they could construct them. He would manage it after the wall. Kaelin was beside him when he came through the throne hall's side doors. Not behind him, not being carried, beside him, with the pace of someone who had matched his stride and was not asking permission to continue matching it. He said, "You need to stay with..." "No," Kaelin said. He looked at his son, 9 years old, moving through palace corridors with the focused calm of someone who had decided where they were going and why. He said, "This is a wall engagement. Shadow Dominion contact. This is not... I know what it is, Kalin said. I've been in six of them. He said it without pride, just accuracy. You haven't. He stopped walking. For exactly 2 seconds, he stopped walking and looked at his son. He said, stay within 10 feet of me or Davon. If I give a direction, it is not a request. Kalin said, agreed. He started walking again. Celine was at the palace's northern corridor junction, which told him she had been moving parallel to his route through a different passage, which told him she had been in this palace long enough in the last hour to have identified the parallel route, which was both impressive and typical of her in a way that he did not currently have time to think about. She looked at him. She looked at Kalin beside him. Something moved through her face that was not protest and was not resignation. The specific expression of a woman who had made peace with who her son was and found it difficult every time that peace was tested. She said, Northern Wall. Yes, he said. She said, he goes to the wall line, not over it. Agreed. He looked at her. I need you with the Highland Settlers, the palace's eastern residential wing. Get them secured there. Anyone who questions your authority to be in that wing, tell them the king's direct authorization. She said, I'm not going to the residential wing. He said, Celine, I'm a field medic, and you are going to a wall contact engagement with soldiers who have been holding an undermanned position for days. She said it with the flat, complete reasonableness of someone who has already closed the argument. Tell me where the medical station is. He looked at her for 1 second. He said, South Barracks, Eastern Approach. There's a garrison medic named Hora who knows where everything is. She was already moving. The northern wall was 3/4 of a mile from the palace gate, along an avenue that the capital used for formal processions in ordinary times, and was currently being used for the controlled, urgent movement of soldiers repositioning toward a contact line. He covered it in the specific fast walk that ate distance without burning reserves, with Davin and Kalin and 8 soldiers around him. The sound from the wall grew as they covered the distance. Not the sound of a single engagement, but the layered sound of multiple contact points, the sharp percussion of weapons on something that wasn't stone or wood, the specific harmonic of Shadow Dominion creature movement that vibrated in the sternum, the human component underneath both of those, soldiers maintaining formation under pressure with the controlled noise of people who were afraid and doing their job anyway. Fear and function were not incompatible. He had learned that early and had spent his entire military career building it into the soldiers he commanded, the understanding that fear was information, not failure, and that the job was to use the information rather than be used by it. The wall came into view. He assessed it in the first 2 seconds, and the assessment was worse than the signal pattern had indicated, which meant the signal pattern had been managed for the same reason the dispatch had been delayed by 2 days, and the eastern garrison had been pulled off the line. 3 contact points on the northern face. One on the northwestern corner, which was the most structurally vulnerable point of the capital's wall system, and had been scheduled for reinforcement engineering for 6 years, and had not received it because the budget allocation had been redirected 3 times in 6 years, and he needed to have a very direct conversation with someone about that when this was over. The creatures at the northwestern contact were the largest, the same class as the Highlands creature Kalin had faced, or larger, the kind that had weight in the earth before they had presence above it. The eastern contact point was thinner. The creatures there were moving differently, not the direct structural pressure of the northwest, but a flanking pattern, probing the wall at multiple points in sequence, looking for the gap that the undermanned garrison had inevitably produced. He found the wall's current commander in 30 seconds. A young officer, mid-20s, with the expression of someone who had been making decisions above their rank for approximately 3 days and was still making them because there was no one else. Lieutenant Kress, her collar insignia said. He did not have time to learn her full name. He said, report. She gave him the report the way she had clearly been giving reports to herself for 3 days, rapidly, accurately, in the stripped-down language of someone who had learned to communicate under pressure by cutting everything that wasn't information. 3 contact points. Northwestern contact began 4 hours ago, escalating. Eastern contact began 90 minutes ago, origin unclear. The creatures had appeared from the eastern approach without triggering the outer tripwire systems,
which meant either the systems had failed or the creatures had found a route that bypassed them. Northern Center was holding with heavy casualties. He said, "Origin of the Eastern Contact. The creatures came from the east." She said, "Yes, my lord." He said, "Not the north." "No." He looked at the eastern wall. He ran the geography. The Shadow Dominion incursion lines had been threading through the Empire's northern interior, moving northeast. The creatures at the northwestern contact were consistent with that trajectory. The creatures at the eastern contact had appeared from the east, bypassing the outer systems. He said, "They came through the city." She stared at him. She said, "That's... the city is populated. There would have been..." "The eastern residential district is mostly evacuated. It's been evacuating for 3 days while the administrative complex fire was drawing attention." He said it while he was figuring it out, the calculation running ahead of the words. "Someone left a corridor through the eastern district, clear path from outside the wall to the inside of the defensive line." She said, "Who would..." "Someone who needed the wall to fail from the inside." He was already turning. "The eastern contact is the priority. If it reaches the wall base from inside the line, the northern face holds, but the city is lost." He looked at her. "Hold the northwestern contact. Do not send additional resources east. I'll handle the eastern contact." She said, "My lord, with respect, you have 9 soldiers," he said, "and something else. Hold the northwest." He turned to Kaelin. Kaelin was already looking east. He had been looking east since before Valor had processed the eastern contact's origin. He said, "There are 3 of them, maybe 4. They're moving in the drainage channel under the eastern market district." Valor said, "You can feel them." "Yes." He paused. "They feel different from the Highlands ones. Angrier, like they've been pushed." Pushed. He filed that with everything else he was filing. He said, "Can you reach them from here?" Kaelin said, "I need to be closer." "How close?" "Close enough to look at them." He said, "We move east. Devon, take 3 men and flank north of the drainage line. When Kaelin makes contact, push from the north." He looked at his remaining soldiers. "With me." "Standard contact formation. Tight. Nobody gets between me and the boy." They moved. The Eastern Market District had the specific quality of a space designed for crowds that contained no crowds. The stalls still stocked, the surfaces showing the organized abandonment of people who had left with time to take their important things. The absence of people made the sound from the drainage channel easier to hear, the deep harmonic of something large moving through confined stone space, and it made the shadows between the stalls longer than they should have been, shadows with an edge that had nothing to do with the light angle. Valor moved through it with his soldiers in the close formation he had called, and with Kaelin inside the formation. And his sword was in his hand, not because it would be decisive against what was in the drainage channel, but because a sword in hand was a different posture than a sword sheathed, and the posture mattered for the soldiers around him. He was aware, moving through the empty market, of how completely the situation had restructured itself in the last 6 hours. He had ridden into the Highlands with 40 soldiers and a cover story and a mission objective that he had been almost honest with himself about. He had come back to a capital where his wife had confessed to engineering a war. He was now moving through an empty market toward creatures that his 9-year-old son could apparently sense through drainage channels, and the plan he was executing was get close enough for Kaelin to look at them. He had operated under worse plans. He was having difficulty remembering when. The drainage channel access came through a grate in the market's central plaza. He heard the movement before he saw it. The stone grinding quality of something too large for the channel pushing through it anyway, the hydraulic displacement of standing water, the specific sound that preceded visible contact. He put his arm across Kaelin's chest in the instinctive gesture of someone stopping a smaller person from moving forward, and Kaelin stopped without resistance but looked at him with the expression that said, I know, let me work. He lowered his arm. The first creature came through the grate with the quality of something that had never understood that its size should limit it. It pushed through the iron grate as if the iron was an inconvenience rather than a barrier, the metal shearing with a sound like a scream, and it came into the plaza light with the specific wrongness of Shadow Dominion presence,
the cold that came from inside it rather than from the air around it. His soldiers held formation. He felt them hold it, the will it cost, the specific grip on training that was required when the thing in front of you made every instinct in your body vote for elsewhere. He had felt that instinct every time. He had learned not to vote with it. The learning never made the instinct quieter, only the response to it more practiced. Kaelin looked at the creature. The creature stopped its forward movement. Valor watched it happen the same way he had watched it in the Highlands clearing, not gradually, not with the visible process of something being persuaded. A direct contact between the boy's attention and the creature's awareness, and then the cessation, the held quality of something that had received a message it was processing. For 9 seconds, nothing moved in the plaza. Then, from the north, from Davan's flanking position, came the sound of a second creature that had not come through the main grate, but through a secondary access point, and it came into the plaza from Kaelin's left, from a direction that was inside the defensive formation, and it was faster than the first one, and it was not stopping. Valor moved. He moved the way he moved when there was no calculation left, when the variables had collapsed to one and the one was in front of him, with the total committed force of a body that had been trained for exactly this for 30 years and had no hesitation left because hesitation was a thing that required a future to protect, and the future was 1 second away and getting smaller. He put himself between the second creature and Kaelin with his sword up and his shoulder forward, and he took the first impact on the blade rather than the body, which redirected the creature's momentum rather than stopped it, which gave him 2 feet and half a second. The creature was twice his mass. He knew what twice his mass felt like. He had fought it before in the northern campaigns when the incursions had been smaller and the fortress line had been intact and the emperor's eldest son had not been standing 12 feet behind him in an empty market plaza. He had fought bigger problems for worse reasons. He used the 2 feet and the half second to get his weight low and his blade angled, and he drove into the creature's movement rather than away from it, using its own momentum to redirect it past him and into the stall to his right, which gave him the half second he needed to get a full grip and drive the blade into the specific point between the creature's outer structure where, based on field reports from the northern campaigns, the interior was accessible. It was not a clean engagement. It was not the kind of engagement that produced stories worth telling later. It was the kind of engagement that produced bruises in places that took a week to fully catalog, and a cut on his left forearm that he would not notice for 20 minutes, and the specific internal accounting of a body that had been pushed close to its limit and was managing the information. He held the blade. The creature stopped moving. He pulled back. Behind him, he heard Kaelin's voice. Not words, or not words in any language he had, but the sound of something being directed, something being communicated in the frequency that bypassed hearing and went to the bone. And the first creature, which had resumed its movement when Kaelin's attention shifted to the second one, stopped again. And this time it did not resume. His soldiers had engaged the third creature when it came through from the eastern channel access. He turned and assessed. 2 soldiers down, not dead. The formation had compressed well, and the creature was being managed, not decisively, but adequately. Devan's flanking group had come in from the north and added weight. He said, "Kaelin." Kaelin said, "Ah, I have them." He looked at his son. Standing in the plaza with the light from the eastern sky behind him and his hands open at his sides, exactly the posture from the Highlands clearing, the specific stillness of someone doing something that did not require any external indication to be working. 3 creatures in various positions of stillness around the plaza. Valor's soldiers holding the third one's attention on the eastern side. He said, "Can you hold them?" Kaelin said, "Yes." He said, "And move them." A pause. "Where?" "Back through the drainage channel, south, out of the city." Another pause, longer. The quality of it was someone doing something difficult but not impossible, the pause of effort rather than inability. Then, "Yes, give me a minute." He gave him the minute. He stood in the empty eastern market plaza with blood on his left arm and a sword that needed cleaning and 2 soldiers sitting against a market stall being assessed by a third, and he watched his 9-year-old son redirect 4 Shadow Dominion creatures through a drainage channel and out of the city. The resonance faded south. The cold faded with it. The plaza was ordinary and empty. Devon said from the north side, "That happened." Valor said, "Yes." "I want to be very clear that I understand what I just watched." "Good. We need the understanding for what comes next." He looked at Kaelin, who had released the stillness posture and was standing with the particular quality of someone who had used significant resources and was doing the internal accounting of what remained. He said, "Are you all right?" Kaelin said, "Yes, tired." A pause. "It's harder when they're angry. They push back." He said, "You push back harder." Kaelin looked at him with those gray eyes. "Yeah," he said, with the simple directness of a 9-year-old who had not yet learned to make his competence smaller in deference to other people's comfort with it. "I did." He put his hand on the back of his son's head for 2 seconds. The only gesture he had that was not operational, the only one he was willing to make in the middle of a wall engagement, brief and complete. And then he took his hand back and said, "Northwestern contact. Move. Hook." The northwestern wall was worse than the eastern contact had been because it was structural. The creatures there were not flanking or probing. They were pressing the wall with the directness of something that had been pointed at a specific point and told to push. The wall's northwestern corner was taking stress damage that showed in the mortar lines, in the specific crack patterns of stone that was holding more load than it had been designed to hold. Lieutenant Kress had held it. Barely. And with losses he would account for fully later. But she had held it. He came up to the wall command position, and she turned with the expression of someone who had been expecting either relief or disaster, and was still calibrating which one he represented. He said, "How long has the corner been stressed?"
2 hours.
"The mortar on the outer face is failing. If the pressure continues at current weight,
it won't."
He looked at the wall. He looked at the creatures pressing it, visible from the parapet, large enough that the visual of them was its own form of psychological pressure. He had felt it at the Greywood Garrison and at Ashgard, and he had learned what to do with it, which was to make it the last thing you looked at rather than the first, to get the tactical picture clear before you let the visual register. The tactical picture said, 3 creatures of the largest class, direct pressure on the corner, positioned with an efficiency of placement that did not look instinctive. It looked directed. Someone had put them at the most vulnerable point of the wall with a knowledge of structural engineering that Shadow Dominion creatures did not typically possess. Someone had told them where to push. He said, "Kaelin?" Kaelin came to the parapet beside him and looked down at the 3 creatures. He was quiet for longer than the Eastern Plaza had required. He said, "These ones are different." Valor said, "How?" "They're not just angry, they're controlled. Something is controlling them." He looked at the wall. "Or someone," he said. "Can you reach them?"
"I can try, but whatever is controlling them is going to push back."
He said it with the same honest accuracy he applied to everything. "And it's stronger than I am." Valor looked at the creatures. He looked at the wall. He looked at his son. He said, "What do you need?" Kaelin said, "I need to be on the outside of the wall." The silence lasted 1 second. He said, "No. If I'm above them, the angle is wrong. The contact doesn't work as well from..." "No." "Valor." The boy used his name, not "my lord," not the formal address that the court would expect from a child in this position. His name, with the directness of someone who had not been taught to use it as anything other than what it was. "I know what I'm asking. I'm not asking because I don't understand what's out there." He looked at his son. He said, "You understand?"
"Yes."
"And you're asking anyway?"
"Yes."
He had been a king for 6 years. He had made the calculation in the antechamber 9 years ago that put the Empire's 400,000 above the bond. He had made dozens of calculations since that were the same essential shape, the system over the person, the structural necessity over the human cost. He had told himself every time that this was the burden of the position, that the ability to make the calculation cleanly was what separated a ruler from a man who only meant well. He was looking at his son, who was offering to go outside the wall into direct contact with 3 controlled Shadow Dominion creatures of the largest class, and he was making the calculation. He could feel himself making it,
the tactical picture, the wall's structural status, the cost of losing the northwestern corner, the number of people behind that wall. He was making it, and he hated it, and he made it. He said, "I go with you." Kalin said, "You can't help out there." "I know." He held the boy's gray eyes. "I go with you." Something moved through Kalin's face that he did not name and did not try to. The boy nodded once, the same single nod. He said to Davin, "Get me a rope line, the northwest corner anchor. If I signal, you pull, fast." He said to Lieutenant Kress, "Hold the parapet. Whatever happens outside, nobody comes over the wall." He said to his remaining six soldiers, "You hold this position. Nobody moves until I say." He looked at the wall. He said, "Let's go." Getting over the wall with a rope line was not elegant. He went first, over the parapet and down the outer face, with Kalin behind him on a second line that he checked himself before he let the boy touch it. The specific quality of checking something that someone else's life depends on, which is different from checking something that your own life depends on and requires a different kind of attention. They came down onto the ground outside the northwestern wall into the specific cold of Shadow Dominion proximity. Not weather cold, not wind, but the absence that the creatures generated, the environmental impact of something that ran on a different fuel than everything around it. The three creatures were 40 feet away. They were larger from the ground than they had been from the parapet. This was always true. He had learned it as a young commander in his first northern campaign, and the learning did not make the experience less significant, only more precisely calibrated. He stood between his son and the creatures and put his sword up and understood, with the complete clarity of a body that has done its full accounting, that his sword was not the thing that was going to matter here. The sword was what he could offer. It was not sufficient, and he was offering it anyway, because there was nothing else he had. Because the only thing a man could do when he was standing on the outside of a wall between his son and a controlled army of darkness was to put up what he had and let it mean what it meant. Kalin walked around him. He led him. Kalin walked forward 15 feet and stopped and looked at the creatures the way he looked at everything, with the complete undivided attention of someone for whom looking was a form of contact rather than just observation. The creatures responded immediately. Not with the pause of the Eastern Plaza. They turned on him with the specific quality of something that had been directed toward a target and had found it, and the movement was not the instinctive animal response of the Eastern creatures, but something coordinated, something that moved all three of them at the same angle simultaneously, controlled. Valor moved up to Kalin's right shoulder. Kalin said very quietly, "There's something behind them, using them. Can you see it?" "Not see, feel." He paused. "It knows I'm here." The three creatures had stopped advancing. They were in the specific held quality of a standoff, the tension of two forces in direct contact, and neither one having yet committed to the next move. Valor could feel the cold deepening. It was physical, not metaphor, not impression. The temperature at his skin dropped in measurable increments, his exhaled breath suddenly visible in air that had been warm 30 seconds ago. He said, "Kalin?" "I know," Kalin said. "I can feel it." "Push back." "I'm trying." A pause, and in the pause was the effort, the audible quality of someone doing something that required everything they had. "It's very strong," he said. "Stronger than you." A longer pause. "Not sure yet," Kalin said. That was the most frightening thing his son had said since they had met. The cold continued to deepen. The creatures began to advance slowly, not the direct push of the initial positioning, but the inexorable movement of something that had been given time and was taking it. Valor's sword hand tightened on the grip. He made himself keep his weight forward rather than backward, the deliberate physical choice to stay in contact with the situation rather than away from it, and he understood, with the specific clarity that came from being on the outside of a wall, with everything behind you and very little in front of you, what the calculation had cost every time he had made it. He understood what Celine had built in the Highlands. He understood what it took to look at a situation with no resources and no backup and no structural support and decide that the thing in front of you was going to be managed because there was no one else to manage it. He understood it from the inside now, from the ground up, from the specific cold outside a wall with his sword up and his son beside him and the empire behind him, and whatever was controlling three massive creatures trying to push through to all of it. He understood what she had been doing for 9 years. He understood what it cost. He said quietly, "Kaelin." Kaelin said through the effort, "Yeah." "Whatever you need to do, do it." A pause. Then, "I might not be able to control what happens when I push all the way." He said, "I know. Things might break. I know. You're okay with that." He looked at his son. 9 years old, standing in the cold outside a wall, holding three controlled Shadow Dominion creatures at standoff with whatever lived in his blood and his bone and the specific inheritance of a bloodline that had apparently been building to this moment since before either of them were born. He said, "Whatever breaks, we'll fix it. Push." Kaelin closed his eyes. What happened next was not something Vaelor could describe in the language of tactics or military engagement, because it did not operate in that register. It operated in the register of the resonance he had felt in the throne hall 9 years ago, in the register of the harmonic that went to the bone rather than to the ears, but amplified to a scale that the throne hall resonance had been a whisper of. The air pressure changed. The cold that had been deepening reversed direction, not gradually, but in a single moment of reversal, like a tide turning in real time. The ground under his boots vibrated in the specific frequency of the Shadow Dominion presence, but the frequency was now being met by something that came from inside Kaelin and was larger. The creatures did not pause this time. They broke. Not the held quality of the Eastern Plaza standoff. Something in their coordination shattered, the controlled precision collapsing into the incoherent movement of three very large things that had just lost the signal they were following and had no instruction for what to do without it. They moved away from the wall in the specific erratic pattern of something operating on instinct rather than direction, south and east and northeast, each creature following its own trajectory. And from somewhere behind them, not the creatures themselves, but the thing that had been using them, the thing Kaelin had felt rather than seen, came a sound that was not a creature sound. That was the thing about it. It was not a creature sound. It had too much structure for that, too much intention. It was the sound of something that had a voice and was using it, and the voice was in a frequency that belonged to the same register as the harmonic, but inverted. The sound moved north, away from the capital, away from the wall, away from Kaelin. And as it went, Kaelin opened his eyes. He was breathing hard, not the controlled breathing of someone managing exertion, the hard, unguarded breathing of someone who had been in the middle of something that took everything and had just reached the other side of it. He looked smaller suddenly, the 9 years of him more visible, the child underneath the gift present in a way it hadn't been during the engagement. Vaelor put his hand on his son's shoulder. He said nothing. There was nothing to say that the hand didn't say better. Kaelin said between breaths, "Did it work?" He looked at the wall. The creatures were gone from the northwestern corner. The cold was receding. Above the parapet, he could see Lieutenant Kress's face looking down at them, with the expression of someone recalibrating everything they understood about what a king's son was. He said, "Yes, it worked." Kaelin nodded. He leaned against Vaelor's arm with the unselfconscious weight of a child who had decided that particular support was available to him, and Vaelor held the weight of him and did not move. He stood on the outside of the capital's northern wall with his son leaning against his arm and listened to the sound of the engagement above them winding down. The quality of a wall contact that had been broken rather than sustained, the voices changing register from crisis to aftermath. He had made a calculation in an antechamber 9 years ago. He had made it cleanly, and he had been wrong about what clean meant. He had spent 9 years governing the consequence and calling it responsibility. He understood now what responsibility actually required. It required standing outside the wall. He said, "Let's get back up." Kaelin straightened. He said, "There's something you should know." He looked down. Kaelin said, "The thing controlling them. The sound it made when it left." He paused. "It didn't go north because it was retreating." Vaelor said, "Then why?" Kaelin said, "Because it was going somewhere specific." He looked up at his father with the gray eyes that knew things before they had been confirmed. I could feel where it was going. He said, where?
Kalin said, inside the capital, the eastern residential wing.
A pause.
Where the palace is. And from inside the capital, from the direction of the palace, came the sound of the emergency signal. Not the wall contact pattern, not the garrison alert. The palace signal. The signal that meant the palace itself was under contact, the signal that had not been used in the history of the Empire because the palace had never, in the history of the Empire, been the place the enemy was. Until someone had put them there. He looked up at the wall. He said, rope, now, Humbound. They came back over the wall in 40 seconds, and he was moving before his boots hit the parapet. He said to Lieutenant Kress, northern wall is yours. Hold it. He said to Davin, palace, fast. He looked at Kalin. Kalin said, I know. He said, stay. With you or Davan? I know. They moved. The avenue back to the palace covered differently at a run than it had covered at the urgent walk of 90 minutes ago. The city's suspended quality was gone. The atmosphere had shifted into something more decided. The specific quality of a population that had received enough information to stop waiting and start acting. He passed people moving with purpose toward their homes or toward the outer wall, the civilian instinct of a city organizing itself around a threat it could now name. He passed three separate groups of palace guard moving outward from the palace direction, which was wrong. Palace guard moved inward toward the palace in a threat scenario, not outward from it, which meant someone had given an outward order, which meant someone with command authority over the palace guard had decided that outward was the correct direction. He ran through that logic and arrived at Seraphine's name before the first palace guard group was behind him. The palace forecourt had changed since he'd left it, not the organized violence of a battle, the specific chaos of a transition, people moving quickly through space with different objectives, the geometry of competing command structures in the same physical location. He read it as he entered it. A group of household guard in valorous colors that had not been in the capital 2 weeks ago were positioned at the main entrance, which meant they had entered the city during the period the eastern gates were managed by the pulled garrison, which meant the garrison pull had been for this and not for internal security, and the coherence of the picture was becoming very clear very quickly. He said to Davin, valorous household, count and position. Davin said 20 seconds later, 30 at the main entrance, unknown inside. The Valeris colors started appearing in the capital 4 days ago. I didn't flag them because a queen's household guard is in the capital often enough that 4 days ago it was background noise. He said it without anger because this was not the moment for anything that slowed the forward movement. It's not background noise now. He looked at the 30 Valeris household guard at the main entrance. He looked at the 8 soldiers with him. He looked at Kalin. The throne hall went cold, and then it went silent, and then it went something that had no word in any language Valor knew, because silence was still a human thing, still a thing that existed in the register of what people experienced, and what happened in the next 20 seconds was not in that register. Kalin looked at the thing in the center of the hall. The thing looked at Kalin. Valor stood one step behind his son with his sword up and felt the cold move through him like a hand reaching into his chest and finding his heart and simply holding it, not squeezing, just holding. A demonstration of access rather than an act of violence. This is what we can do, the cold said. This is what you are standing in front of. He felt it and kept his sword up and did not step back. The household guard on the dais had stopped moving. The noble house heads had stopped moving. Even Seraphine on the throne she had spent 9 years engineering herself toward was still, not with the stillness of composure, but with the stillness of someone who has introduced something into a room and is no longer certain they understand what they introduced. Kalin said, in the frequency that was not quite speech, the one that went to the bone instead of the ears, no, not the word, the thing underneath the word, the refusal that was not anger and not fear, and was something older than both. The specific rejection of a living thing that has been tested and has decided with total commitment that it is not going to yield. Not because it was certain it could win, because yielding was not a category it recognized. Valor felt it. He felt it move through him from his son's direction, through the cold, into the thing in the center of the hall. The thing held.
For 8 seconds it held, and the cold deepened, and the hall darkened at its edges in the way that preceded the complete loss of ambient light that the Greywood and Ashguard reports had described in the worst engagements. The specific darkness that was the Shadow Dominion's most fundamental expression of presence. And then Kaelin's hand found his father's arm. Not reaching backward. Reaching sideways, the way a person reached for something they knew was there without needing to confirm it visually. The grip of a 9-year-old hand on a grown man's forearm, and it was not the grip of a child reaching for protection. It was the grip of someone drawing from a resource they had identified and trusted. Valor covered his son's hand with his own, and the thing in the center of the throne hall broke. Not dramatically, not with the sound and fury of something defeated in violence. It broke the way certainty broke. From the inside, the structure collapsing inward, the presence that had been a physical cold in the room, receding in the specific way of something that had found, in the place it expected to find a limit, something that did not have one. Not because Kaelin was limitless, because Kaelin was not alone, and the thing in the darkness had run its test on the assumption that he was, and the assumption had been wrong. The cold left the hall. The darkness at the edges receded. The air came back. Valor lowered his sword. He did not let go of his son's hand. Horsit. What followed was not a battle. Battles required two sides with the capacity to press their position, and what remained in the throne hall after the darkness left was not a fighting force. It was 12 household guard who had just watched something large and ancient retreat from a 9-year-old child and were in the process of recalibrating everything they understood about the assignment they had taken. It was 6 noble house heads, for whom the arithmetic had just completed its final calculation in a direction that made the emergency sovereignty instrument look like the worst investment of their careers. It was Seraphine, on the throne, with the composure still present in her face and the specific quality underneath it of someone who has played every card they had and is looking at an empty hand. The household guard laid down their weapons in the order that made sense, which was the order in which each individual person decided that the thing they had agreed to defend no longer existed in a form they recognized. The 6 noble house heads did not lay down weapons because they had not been carrying them. They stood at the dais perimeter and looked at the floor and at each other and at the door, the specific body language of people running probability calculations on how much of the situation was retrievable. Some of it was retrievable. He would deal with that in the days ahead, the long, careful work of determining which of the 14 houses had acted from genuine political calculation and which had acted from knowledge of Seraphine's deeper architecture, and he would deal with it with the understanding that political calculation was not treason and knowledge was. The distinction would matter. He would make it matter. He walked to the dais. Seraphine watched him come. She did not move from the throne. She sat in it with the stillness of someone who has committed to a position and is going to hold it until the position is physically removed, not from stubbornness. She had never been stubborn. Stubbornness was not precise enough for her, but from the specific pride of someone who had built something and was going to make the world come to her to take it apart. He stood at the base of the dais steps and looked up at her. He said, "It's over." She said, "I know." He said, "The Council will convene a formal review, the Valerie's Alliance, the barrier communication, the administrative fire, all of it on record." She said, "I know that too." She looked at him with the full intelligence she had always had, undiminished, unashamed of itself. "I want you to understand something." He waited. She said, "I did not fail because I was wrong about the Empire. The Empire was failing. I was not wrong about that." She held his gaze. "I failed because I thought the solution was to replace the person rather than fix the crack. I thought you were the crack." A pause. "I was wrong about that. The crack was what you chose, not who you are. And you were fixing it before I had finished building the replacement." He looked at her for a long moment. He said, "That's honest." She said, "I've always been honest. I was just honest in service of the wrong objective." He said, "Stand down from the throne, Seraphine." She stood. She walked down the dais steps with the same ease she had always moved, the quality of someone who had never needed to perform dignity because it was structural rather than performed. She stopped 2 steps from him. she said quietly, so it was only between them.
The boy is extraordinary.
He said, I know. She said, he's going to fix what neither of us could. He said, I know that too. She looked at him one last time with the cold, precise intelligence that had been running calculations for 9 years, and in it, underneath the intelligence, was something that might have been in a different architecture, in a different antechamber, a different 9 years, something that might have been grief for the thing that had never been there to lose. She walked past him toward the hall's side doors, and two of his soldiers fell in behind her, and the door closed. The council review took 11 days. The barrier communication was documented through three intermediaries, all of whom provided testimony in exchange for reduced accountability. The administrative fire was traced to Seraphine's household steward, who had carried the order and was prepared to say whose order it was. The Valeris household guard were escorted to the border with a formal diplomatic communication that dissolved the remaining treaty obligations, which were now obligations to a succession dispute rather than to a kingdom. Seraphine was remanded to house confinement in the Eastern Territories pending the review's formal conclusions. It was not a gentle resolution, and it was not meant to be. It was the resolution the evidence required. 14 noble houses rebuilt their positions in the specific way of people who had overextended and were now negotiating the terms of return. He let them negotiate. Some of the terms he accepted. Some he refused. The distinction was the one he had promised himself. Calculation versus knowledge, political error versus structural betrayal. The Shadow Dominion incursion lines receded, not immediately, not completely. But in the days following the throne hall, the incursion lines moved north in a pattern that Kaelin described as withdrawal rather than retreat, the difference between something that had decided to stop pressing and something that had been driven back, something that had found its test answered and had gone away to process the result. He did not know what the Dominion would do with the result. He knew it was not finished. He knew, with the honest accounting that had become his primary tool since the Highlands, that the Empire's northern problem was not solved, but was changed. Changed by the fact of Kaelin's existence, by the question the test had asked, and the answer it had received, by whatever the thing in the throne hall had taken back into the darkness when it left. He was going to have to deal with what it took back. He would deal with it. Not today. Don't. He found Selene on the 14th day in the Eastern Residential Wing, where the Highland settlers had been housed, and were now in the complicated process of deciding whether to return to a Highlands that was safer than it had been, or to stay in a capital that was stranger than they had imagined. She was sitting in the window of the room that had been given to her, which looked out over the palace's eastern garden, and she was doing something with her hands that he identified, when he got close enough, as mending. The practical needle and thread work of someone for whom doing something useful with waiting time was not a preference, but a habit. She looked up when he came in. He sat in the chair across from her. He did not have a prepared statement. He had spent 11 days managing the review and the council and the diplomatic communications and the garrison restructuring and the ongoing northern monitoring, and he had not prepared a statement because the thing he needed to say to her was not the kind of thing that survived preparation. He said, I want to ask you something. She set down the mending. She looked at him with the healer's assessment, reading what his face was showing, and what his face was showing was apparently sufficient information because she did not ask him to continue. She waited. He said, I'm not asking you to forgive 9 years. I'm not asking you to rebuild what was broken in that antechamber because it wasn't built in the first place and you can't rebuild a thing that never had its foundation. What I'm asking is whether you're willing to let me start. He held her eyes. Not for the Empire. Not for Kaelin. For the thing the Covenant named, which I set aside because I thought setting it aside was the same as resolving it. I know now that it wasn't. I know what it cost. I'm asking if the cost can become a foundation instead of a grave. She looked at him for a long time. Outside the window, in the Eastern Garden, Kaelin was visible, sitting on a bench with three of the wolves that had followed the settlers down from the Highlands, which had alarmed the palace groundskeepers significantly, and which Valor had resolved by making the wolves a formal matter of imperial record, because that was apparently the kind of king he was going to be now. Selene looked at her son in the garden with those wolves. She said, He asked me last night if we were staying. He said, what did you tell him? She said, I told him I didn't know yet. He said, that's honest. She looked back at him. She said, I spent 9 years building something in the Highlands that worked. It was hard and it was lonely, and there were winters I don't want to describe to you, and it worked. I built something that worked for materials that weren't supposed to work with and in a place where no one expected anything to be built. She held his gaze. I need you to understand that before I give you any other answer. I need you to understand that what I made was real and what I was without you was real, and it was not a lesser thing waiting to be completed. He said, I understand that. She said, say it like you mean it. He said, what you built was real. What you are without me is whole. What I am asking for is not completion. It is the choice to walk the same direction. He held her gaze. I know the difference. I should have known it 9 years ago. I know it now because I have spent 11 days rebuilding a council and a garrison and a diplomatic framework, and the only thing I could not manage with governance was this room. She looked at him. She picked up the mending again. She looked at it. She set it back down. She said, 1 year. He was very still. She said, 1 year where you govern this empire the way I built the Highland settlement. With the people in it, not above them. Where Kaelin is a child before he is an heir. Where I have the same authority in this palace that I had in that settlement. And if you override it, you do it to my face with a reason I can argue with. She held his gaze. 1 year, then we decide. He said, yes. She said, I'm not done. He said, I know. Keep going. Something moved at the corner of her mouth, for not quite a smile, but the place a smile came from. She said, the supply contract for Greywater. I want it expanded. Every frontier settlement within 3 weeks of the Duskwall Ridge. Guaranteed delivery, standing order, imperial priority. He said, done. She said, and a record, written and sealed. Every name from Derek's Crossing. Every name from Halden. She held his eyes. So they are not background cost. So they are people. He said, I'll write it myself. She was quiet for a moment. She looked at the garden where Kaelin sat with the wolves in the pale afternoon light, 9 years old and already the kind of person that spaces organize themselves around, the kind of gravity that had nothing to do with force and everything to do with the willingness to be genuinely present in whatever he was standing in. She said softly, he wants to learn the city. He said, I know. He told me. She said, he's going to be better than both of us. He said, yes. She said, that was the point. She looked at him, and in her face was 9 years of what she had built and what it had cost and what had survived it. The clean, hard thing from the antechamber, still there, but with something alongside it now that had not been there before. Not softness. Something more durable than softness. The specific quality of a person who has been through the worst the world had for them and has found that they are still standing and has decided that standing is enough to start from. She said, go finish your council review. I have mending. He stood. He looked at her one more time. He said, thank you. She said, don't thank me yet. He went. In the eastern garden, Kaelin looked up when his father's shadow crossed the bench. Valor sat beside him. The wolves shifted, read him, settled. He had stopped being surprised by the wolves. He suspected the wolves had always understood something about him that he was only now catching up to. Kaelin said, she's staying. He said, we will be. The Empire had not been saved by the man who once chose power over Covenant. It had not been saved by force or treaty or the careful management of political structure. It had been saved in the specific and unglamorous way that things were actually saved by a woman who built something real in a place no one was watching. And a boy who had learned from her that the measure of a thing was not how much it could dominate, but how much it could protect. And a king who had finally, at the cost of 9 years and every comfortable fiction he had built in their place, learned the difference between governing a system and being responsible for the people inside it. The throne would still be there tomorrow. The council would reconvene. The northern situation would require attention. The 14 houses would need managing. The frontier supply contracts would need filing. The names from Derek's Crossing and Halden needed to be written down, all of them, in permanent record, so that the cost of what the Empire had done and failed to do was not theoretical but specific and human and present. There was so much work left. He had never been more certain that he was the right person to do it, not because he was powerful, but because he had finally stopped confusing power with the willingness to be accountable to what it broke. The sun moved west. The wolves slept. Kaelin leaned against his father's arm with the unselfconscious weight of a child who had decided the support was available to him and did not second-guess the decision. Valor held the weight of his son and did not move. That was enough. For now, it was completely enough.